You're listening to Triple Radio on the Fat Gatsby Network.
Triple Radio.
Right, oh, whatever. Wait. Oh, but yeah. Now I'm recording. See, you started your thing, okay. But I didn't actually hit record because I wasn't sure if you were ready. But now, so why don't we take that again? Let's back to one, everybody. Can we go back to one?
Thank you, one.
All right. And sound speeding and action. Yep.
Hey, everybody.
Beating.
Welcome to Triple Radio. I'm Tim. That's Dave. That's Weiss.
Hey, we did it.
Was it Emil used to always say speed? When it was for rolling, I think that was
person to person. You know what? Yeah. Actors understand both, as far as my experience, anyways.
Yeah. Where is I missing one of my? I just got distracted because I realized one of my little Nintendo controller part keychain things.
Oh yeah.
Oh, should I check my post office?
Nope, it's still right here.
Okay.
I realized that, like, duh, I do have boxes down in my basement. There it is. There's the other one that's missing.
No rush. It's the same thing when, like, my mom sends me something. I'm like, just tell me, because I don't check my mail, like, more than every, like, 3 weeks or so.
Yeah. Like, just not much coming in.
No.
Yeah. And you're not going to mail me mine, because we are going to see each other in November.
Yeah.
At a Bit Brigade show. And at that time, I am going to bring what I am hoping your wife might think is a not completely disgusting protein drink.
Oh, cool.
It's the best tasting one I've ever had. I didn't mention to this when she brought it up on social media, is one that's like Cinnamon Toast Crunch flavored. I guess it's like cinnamon. It's like cinnamon bun flavored.
Okay, so there's just like it's covering up the protein flavor, basically.
I'm personally, I am not a person who mines protein powder. Like, I think I made my either I made my peace with it long ago, or it just doesn't bother me. But Lauren has expressed her absolute revulsion for any protein powder. But there is the Quest makes one that tastes like a cinnamon roll. And I personally think that it is delicious, and she might as well, if it's helpful. I'm going to buy a tub and I'm going to bring you a sample, or I'll just give you the whole tub. And if she doesn't it, give it back to me.
Very good. Yeah. I was going to say, you're just going to put some in like a Ziploc baggie. And
that was the plan. Yes.
Pass it to each other.
A Ziploc baggie of white powder.
For a band. Yeah. At a rock show. That's what the... That's very cool.
I see nothing wrong with that plan. Hey, how's it going? This has been our workout minute. This has been our fitness. We didn't actually talk about working out, but fitness.
No, sports, I was going to sports drinks.
Protein. Okay. Yeah, protein intake is important.
Yeah, I was just mentioning to Weiss, tangentially to the story about how I spent my day going on a field trip to Niagara Falls.
That looked fun and wet.
With my kids. It was wet and wild. I have never done the Niagara Falls tourist trap things before.
Yeah.
I've just kind of gone there and stared at the falls and been like, wow, that's scary. Because when you're right there at the guardrail,
right,
and
there.
Also loud, I should also mention loud. Oh, yeah, it's so just like, loud. Oh, if you just go ass over tea kettle over this railing here, you're just dead.
Yeah. You know, it's a pain in the ass filming a movie right there.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, you filmed there with Gimli.
Yeah.
That is a true story.
Was that full ADR at that point? Like,
no,
did you get any?
We got it. I mean, they mic'd. We all wore body mics, and there was a boom above us, and they must have just. But it was so loud.
I was gonna say all of that. Still, that's a lot of
And you know,
they worked hard.
That might be why the second AD kept like shouting at us. I thought that he was mad, but like I think we were just talking loudly because we couldn't hear over the roar of the falls. And finally, he was like, "Actors, please lock it up." I'm like, "Sorry, we just couldn't hear anything."
Anyway. So we went up there. And it's, you know, because we're doing these things, it's a lot of, you know, just waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting, because it's like We did, you know, we, well, okay, so this was cool. They, for some reason, apparently whatever monies they used to purchase, you know, this trip, they got chartered buses instead of school buses.
Ooh.
Which, and it was like a brand new bus.
Luxury coach seats and everything.
Yeah. Oh, it was so comfortable. And so, it, yeah, like all the kids, it was like the nicest vehicle they've ever been in.
Oh, that's great.
They're like, oh, this is the life. We've made it now. We're rich for this trip. We're riding in style. Absolutely. I mean, it was nice. I was not complaining.
Yeah.
Then I thought I was going to have to cram into a bus somewhere, school bus, but no, it was nice. So yeah, we did this thing called the Cave of the Winds.
Yes.
Dave, you done any of this bullshit before?
I've not done any of this bullshit before, but I'm familiar with the Cave of the Winds. I've been intimately acquainted with, well, not personally, but yeah, I know what you're talking
about. Cave of the Winds, not a cave.
I mean, it's an alcove, right?
Yeah. Well, so you go, the way they do it is you go into like, there's like a little, like one room kind of museum exhibit area with stuff about the falls. And then they put you into another room where they show you like a quick little like 5-10 minute movie about the founding of Niagara Falls State Park and Nikola Tesla and stuff like that. And then you
feels
walk
like the
around.
Start of a Simpsons episode.
Yeah. And so then you have to like, you know, you walk back, you know, towards the gorge where you then take an elevator down and, you know, the elevator can only accommodate 12 people at a time.
Mm.
So you I'll going pack onto an elevator. You got to wait in line to get on the elevator, and then you go down, and then there is a tunnel. So I guess that's the cave. At which point you come out, they give you a poncho to throw over yourself, and then you like walk up, and they have like kind of this walkway catwalk that goes up. So basically it's just these platforms that are right at the base of one of the sets of falls. For those that are not familiar, Niagara Falls is actually three different falls. Technically, the ones you're most familiar with, if you're not from the area, are the Horseshoe Falls. Those are the ones you will see on TV, the huge ones. But then, like,
this information brought to you by the instructional film that Tim was forced to watch this afternoon.
No. I already knew this. This is already down there. So this next to that is like the Bridal Falls and the American Falls, which are like segmented off by Goat Island. That's what it's called.
Yeah, it was the disdain in your voice for Goat Island.
What you got against Goat Island, huh?
Nothing. So it's the greatest to walk around on this little walkway that's like at the base of the fall. So there's just like water spraying everywhere, and that was pretty fun. And then we had to walk all the way, you know, back out of the park basically to the tourist trap Niagara Falls American side. To do the Maid in the Mist, which, you know, wait, walk out, take an elevator down, walk out, get your poncho on, wait for the boat to come around. The Maid in the Mist is a boat, by the way. So you get on this boat and then it drives over like into the Horseshoe Falls and does some donuts. And then you drive back and then it does another donut.
How are kids with waiting? Kids usually don't like waiting.
Yeah. By the last one, they were kind of done with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
no.
Basically, well, the last one was after we had done the Maid of the Mist and gone back up the elevator and met a random Buffalo Bills player who was there.
Yeah, that's cool.
Who was around. Yeah, that was cool.
Jana was like, I've heard of him.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a rookie this year.
Yeah, that's great.
People know. Yeah, no. Oh, okay. The kids were very excited. It was just weird because I was like taking, you know, a picture of my child. And then all of a sudden I heard someone do the Let's Go Buffalo sing song chant thing.
Yeah.
And it was like he appeared. It was like he was summoned by someone doing it. But I imagine it's because they saw him. And that's how you just. That's what they do. Yeah. And then waiting to like then proceed to the buses. Like the kids were very antsy and.
Yeah.
Ready to go, but so I was exhausted, but anyways, yeah, if you're coming to visit, I thought the Cave of the Winds was pretty cool. I think the Maid of the Mist is probably a ripoff, because when you're down in the Horseshoe Falls, it's just mist. There's just water spray everywhere. You can't see shit. And the Canadian side is better anyways, because then you're looking at the falls rather than standing next to them and like looking down. Yeah, lots of touristy stuff on both sides, but the Canadian side is better, and everybody knows it.
Yep, that's the spiel I give whenever anybody asks. It's like, did you actually go to the falls? I'm like, yeah, Canadian side's better. Like, always go to the Canadian side.
Yeah, it's just the United States side has the park that you can like, yes. kind of walk around yeah. a bit more.
Yeah. For Western New York actors participating in filming tourism media of the falls, whether it's local commercials or mm-hmm. tourism videos, is a bit of a rite of passage. Everyone's done mm-hmm. it at some point. Yeah. Something that I narrowly evaded, but almost everyone I know at some point has been paid to smile on the Maid in the Mist.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Pretty cool. Quite a day. Yes.
Quite a day. And I also, so this past weekend, I went to the Strong Museum of Play. A hell of a destination in Western New York. Mm-hmm. We were there to primarily check out the new Dungeons and Dragons setup that they put in there as one of their rotating exhibits. This is by that. I'm trying to think what's been in there, but they have that hallway of like racing arcade games.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. yeah, it's,
yeah, it's
you know,
across
that room
from the bridge
there.
Of the Enterprise. And,
yep. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's there. Yeah. And that was cool. Lots of insanely old tabletop gaming artifacts in there. You know, dating back to, you know, the original origins of Dungeons and Dragons being like, you know, wargaming, which is
right.
people like mailing each other stuff and like trying to recreate world wars on their tables with stuff. And then it all, you know, birthing out of that. But seeing, you know, like old notes from Gary Gygax and old handwritten like player character sheets is cool. Mm-hmm. And just tons of old rule books and whatnot. And it was pretty neat.
Yeah. Must be cool.
It's been a lot of I feel like there's been a lot of D&D articles in general in the last like maybe month, and also like it's been a good time for just like satanic panic to bring up with October and just be like, because I feel like it's finally at the point where like we can laugh at it and mm-hmm. it's not like people are still concerned. I'm sure there's still people that are concerned, but
sure, yeah, there was notes about that in the among the exhibits about how yeah there's a certain point where there was a lot of concern about people playing Dungeons and Dragons and whatnot. But boy, has that come a long way in the last like 10 years, even.
Especially, yeah.
Yeah. I guess just podcasts are mainly to blame for that, I feel like.
Well, and the people that grew up with it when the parents were like, this is a scary thing, are now adults mm-hmm. and know, you know, it's been long enough. Like, because there were the series, you know, like there was the kid that jumped off the roof in like the mid 80s, and that was like a lot of the satanic panic stuff. Mm-hmm. And then, like, but that was 40 years ago. Like, all of those kids are grown up now.
Yeah. But I do think, you know, just media and being able to stream things and do podcasts is a good way to get, like, oh, so people can listen to how.
Yeah,
Dungeons
and
Dragons is entertaining and then become interested in it. And then, you know, the pervasiveness of video games with Dungeons and Dragons shit, mm-hmm. and just nerdy shows and whatnot. Yeah. It's everywhere.
Yeah.
Can't avoid.
Yeah, the museum does a good job. Tim, this isn't your first time seeing much of the newest video game stuff, is it?
No, I saw most of the new video game stuff last year, shortly after it opened. I mean, it was like, because Lauren and Richard had gone out there during my hell week at the end of August last year. And they came back just telling me about, like, yeah, you go into this area and you get this little, like, bracelet, and then you play all these games and do all these quests. And I'm like, this sounds incredible. and it is. It is incredible. Like, yeah. So, yeah, I did most of that stuff last year, but it's like, I was also, speaking of school trips, while we were there, I'm just like, Lauren, you have to understand, when we used to come here in the 90s, this place fucking sucked. It was, it was terrible.
Yeah.
Like, it was just cases full of old toys,
dolls
from the 1800s, and it was tiny, and there was just like, whatever.
I remember nothing about any museum trip except for dinosaurs that get bigger in the bathtub. Like, those were great.
Hell yeah. Yeah.
I mean, bones and, you know, the Yeah. Laser light. Sure. That's
it. Oh, yeah. At the Science like Planetarium. Museum. Yeah.
Science Museum. Yes. Yep.
Yeah. I remember that one more because it was more memorable. This one.
Yes.
It's just.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. Strong. I don't think I remember anything. Like, you're telling me that I went. I'm like, sure.
Maybe. Yeah.
Maybe I did.
I just remember it being so incredibly dull. And now it's just like, you go there and they've obviously expanded upon it multiple times and it has a whole different, like you can still find some old dolls if you look around.
Well, even 10 years.
They don't have the, go ahead, Dave.
Like 10 to 15 years ago, when we first revisited the museum with, for some other young people that we were babysitting and then our own children, there were still remnants of like the way the museum used to be. There were still just basically a couple, there was one area that was rows of glass cases where they didn't really have things sorted and organized. They weren't contextualizing things yet. It was just rows of glass cases with mostly all the old dolls from the 1800s.
Well, that's what I like to you. That's 15 years. I'm just like, oh yeah. Like last time I was there.
Yeah.
Was like, yeah. Cause they got the scary doll. They've got the super scary doll. Yeah.
Yes. They do have that scary doll. Yep. No, it's still there. So that, but now it's in a particular case, you know, with context and explanation, and it's next alongside other dolls of the period, and like,
right,
you know, it's
as long as no children are playing with that doll.
No,
we don't need that getting out of the museum.
Yeah, there's more.
I mean, like, the soul of that thing. Yeah,
yeah, that's. I feel like actually, I don't know where that is now. I can probably guess approximately where it is. Like somewhere near where the arcade is upstairs, which they're redoing the arcade right now. Yes.
Oh, geez.
They had signs of the said Infinity Arcade coming like end of October. So
All right. You
have to go back in a couple months to check out what they've done there. I guess they were just like, they put up the new video game section. They're like, all right, time to renovate the old video game section. Yeah, so they have that giant room, like basically cut in half. And they moved some stuff over. And I don't know what they're doing on the other side. They put up, they have this. So where they had the, like, I think it was the video game Wall of Fame there, they now have, because that is now like built out into its own huge thing in the new wing.
Right.
So now they have like these two cases that are just, it's like every console ever released just lined up in there looking all nice and pristine and clean. And it just looks fantastic in there. It looks so good. It was just really cool to stare at all the stuff in there. Yeah, they got like a 64 in there with a 64DD. They got a, you know, there's a PC Engine in there. They have a, you know, the full Sega CD 32X monstrosity. They have this cool there's actually a custom Xbox One with like Strong Museum on it that Microsoft must have made for them just to display. I thought that was pretty cool. Yeah.
That's all new since the last time I was there last year. That's cool.
Yeah. You went there since they did the new stuff, right, Dave?
Yeah. Again, last year. Yeah. We haven't been
last year.
Yeah.
Yeah. They still have that whole Age of Empires section, which seems like it was donated and sponsored by the family that owns Age of Empires, so I'm assuming that's not going anywhere. But it's still cool. Just a very robust history of that game.
Yeah. Why not? Sure.
Yeah. Hey, if you got the stuff.
Yeah.
Probably maybe at some point it'll probably have to change at some point because everything changes in there.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Well, I guess transition off original. Oh, unless you had more.
Nope.
I thought you were. Okay. Yeah. So I dug out my old Xbox. Well, that's how I play game at this point because I'm not buying much.
Yeah.
So it's just sort of like I wanted to play. I was like, I need an excuse to play stuff if I'm like, because I don't replay things. I'm looking around at like all the games that I have, like I need an excuse, and I'm like, oh okay, well October's coming, let's put a couple. And I feel like original Xbox has more of those, or at least I was just sort of like, I had an itch to throw on Fable and just see. Yeah.
I never would have thought it way, but the minute you said it, I'm like, yeah, somehow the original Xbox reminds me of Fall.
That's exactly what I was doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. And started a new Fable for a little bit, and of course gave up because it's, you know, the mechanics are clunky enough at this point. But the atmosphere of that first one is still, it just puts me in the headspace of all of those wonderful promises of like Fable and Black and White and all the Molyneux, you know, the early Molyneux, this will do everything.
Big moonshot, big ideas.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Also threw in Otogi 2 for like a hot second. That game still holds up, but mostly I've been playing Panzer Orta.
Oh yeah.
That game's still, I feel like that game is so underrated.
It's like a game that's gotta get re-released.
It really
does. You can still buy it on Xbox.
Oh yeah?
It works on there.
Yep. Oh, great. Okay. That's good to know. All right.
It is available on Xbox Live for purchase. It is often on sale for like $3-5.
Beautiful.
$3 to $5. So yeah, if you have an Xbox, you can just go buy that game and play it, which is cool. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. No, because it feels good, and the storytelling does that thing where, like, obviously it's a rich story, but they only tell you like a little bit of it, so it feels enormous, even though, like, I don't know.
There's a larger, you know, world, like, beyond the scope.
Yeah. Like, I never got to play Saga because it's fucking expensive. And would still love to play that, but I don't know. I feel like it's, as so many properties are being, like, re-explored, like, it's such a rich world that could be played with. Cool.
How are you, does your TV still have component input?
So I picked up a Trinitron. I guess you can't see it from here.
Oh, wow. So you're playing on a CRT?
Yep, playing on a CRT. Well, like, all it's right, not. Then. Yeah. The only problem is, like, the CRT, like, I have a remote, but I can't get into menus. So, like, I'm adjusting, like, the brightness per game. and stuff like that. Like, I realize, like the settings aren't perfect, but it's still like, if I'm playing something retro, that's what I wanted, where I'm just sort of okay, hook it up to the, like, I think anything Dreamcast or earlier, I guess, at this point.
Were you able to find it, or did you pay an exorbitant price for the CRT?
Oh, I found it. It was during like lockdown times.
Okay. I thought this was a recent acquisition. I'm sorry.
No, I only break it out every once in a while. It's still, you know, like, I have to break a system out and all that shit. But it was a good excuse, especially when, like, people were, like, buying consoles and that. And it was another one of those things where I'm like, well, if I have a Trinitron, you know, then I'm going to play more of my older games and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Earlier this year, I had in my house for the span of like a couple of weeks an Xbox One X that I bought with the intention of gifting it to my little brother, whose Xbox One died some time ago, and he's just been too busy with parenthood to replace it. So I got him this Xbox One X, and I was curious. I wanted to try it myself because I'm like, you know, I hooked it up. I wanted to make sure that it had been, like, cleared off and that it was functional before I gave it to him, because I got it used. So I took it for a test drive, and I was disappointed to learn just how severely scaled back the backwards compatibility was with Xbox One, with original Xbox games. Because I had been under the impression that the 360 emulation layer was comprehensive, was that, like, basically this thing does everything a 360 can do, but that's not the case. So I was bummed, because my 360 is my typical means of playing original Xbox games, because the ones that, you know, it's a huge percentage of the library. It's, you know, everything looks great. Those games that can display in 720p do by default. You know, it's a clean, crisp HDMI connection on my modern television. So I was hot to get a modern Xbox for a while, mostly to play old games, I didn't really realize what a teeny tiny percentage of games are actually backwards compatible with it. I think it's less than 10% of the original library.
So the reason why it's not a technical or hardware thing, it's a licensing thing. Mm. So basically, like, for a game to be playable on a modern Xbox, it has to be it's available on the store.
Yeah.
Because what happens is you put the disc in and then it downloads the digital version and plays that and just uses the disc as like a CD key. So if like any kind of licensing agreement or whatever ran out, then the game's not going to be up there. It's not a thing where you just put the disc in and then it go. That's basically what it is.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff is still backwards compatible. I mean, the fact that you can buy Panzer Dragoon Orta on
Xbox
available. Is pretty crazy.
And as far as you can still get Time Splitters Future Perfect, I believe you can buy for $4, which is fantastic.
It's just I think they just kind of gave up on pursuing that stuff, and they just realized, like, well, okay, the people that are agreeing to put their game up and make money or have done that, or, you know, game rights, you know, go into the abyss after a certain amount of time.
I think it was talked about a bit more with movies, but did you see the law that passed in California that verbatim states, like, if you are buying a game digitally, you're renting it. You are leasing that.
And then people were like, well, that's why you buy physical. But it's like, here's the thing. In the end user license agreements, when you buy a physical game, it says the same shit. It's just like, it's harder for them to stop you. Like, legally, you don't own any video games. It's dumb. Or modern video games, at least. But it's all like, you are, even when you buy a disc, you are buying a license to play that game, technically, or some nonsense like that. It's annoying.
I don't love that. At least legally. Yeah, I was going to say, movies win that. They just don't press as many discs anymore, so you don't even get the option. Well, for games, I'll just go through the I picked SteamWorld Dig 2 was $2. And that was always like one of the first things I put on that wish list and then kept not buying. That game's really fun. Like, I still think, well, my thing is, like, I don't like the look of your main character, of Dottie. I still think, like, I don't know, it just doesn't look physically attractive to me.
Oh, she's not hot enough for you? Sorry, Weiss.
She doesn't have the boob she had in the 90s or whatever.
Can't see her vagina.
They gave her a woke chin. Right.
Yeah, no, I mean, she looks more Oddworld Rayman-y to me,
it's true,
But it is one of those games that looks better in motion, and, you know, you can't beat, like, just the hooks of just the feel of digging, just the things to put resources in. I definitely could use more money, I think, in that game. Like, I opened up a lot of stuff and can't really use it yet, but it's doing what it do. As a sneaky small series, I guess they're 3 for 3, 4 for 4 at this point. They're doing pretty good.
Well, they got, like, what? Well, people, there's two digs, there's two heists.
And a heist. Oh, there's two heists.
Oh, okay. Heist 2 just came out, like, last month or the month before.
Oh, I missed that.
And they have Quest, and they have World, which is a city builder.
I'm sorry, SteamWorld World?
Or SteamWorld. God, what the hell? I think maybe it's just called Builder. SteamWorld. I don't remember what it's called. Build. It's SteamWorld Build.
Okay. I didn't even know about that one.
Yeah. Don't play that on a TV. Because I tried. Because it was on Game Pass, and I tried to play it, and I'm just like, I can't read a goddamn thing. Okay. I think that the general consensus is that it was neat. It was serviceable, but not like exceptional.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I loved the first one and has been, part two has been on my to-do list for literally years.
It's very good.
Yeah. Yeah. I had been meaning to purchase it on Switch, but I also own it on PC and have been just looking for an excuse to start playing it. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's definitely like a good, like flow kind of game where I'm just sort of like, okay, I'll just get some resources or just shut my brain off, just throw myself down a pit, get myself out of it.
Got a good fun loop to it. Yeah. That's what they're. Yeah. I dropped off of Heist because like my machine was having a problem running it at the time. I had it on PC. I never picked it back up. And now Heist 2 is out. So I'm like, well, I'll probably just play that because it's probably better.
Yeah. I mean, I had fun with it. Like,
yeah,
I enjoyed, I mean, like you got far enough, but just like, I like when they do a genre switch, when they can pull off a genre switch like that. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not easy.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that was super fun. And I picked up, because they did the soundtrack swap, I picked up the Mona Lisa and Mondo Gecko in Shredder's Revenge.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I picked up the soundtrack. I did.
Yeah.
Buy that.
Well, that's, I'm going to pay for it. Like, because I think, is the soundtrack free? Or
no? It was like $6.
Oh, okay. Well, it also comes with the DLC, so it was also $4. Yay. But I still have the other DLC to pick up, the other character pack. But
yeah, I haven't gotten that yet.
Yeah, Mona Lisa's fun. It's very different than a lot of the other characters because there's projectiles that she's throwing vases of chemical that you charge up. And yeah, it's a completely different game with like a whole different soundtrack and because she moves around very quickly in cartoon fashions and you're kind of like dropping vials of chemicals behind you, so it's it kind of reminded me of like the Shovel Knight DLCs where it's just sort of like, oh, okay, well this is just switching things up,
which is
cool.
The only way I'll buy a DLC really. But that soundtrack's fucking great. I haven't gotten that far yet. Like, I like having context for the music. Like, I almost just popped it on YouTube, and I'm just like, no. If I play it in the game, I'll like it more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't listened to it yet. I just kind of played some tracks, and I'm like, this sounds like old Konami music.
Yep, it really does.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, That's the games of my month, which is more than usual.
Yeah.
Tim, how about you?
Oh, well, you know,
I know this is a poppin' month.
Yeah, it has been a bit of a poppin' month. Yeah, when we talked last time, which was the first day of school, like I had actually I had finished something up and I was getting finally back into Final Fantasy VII Rebirth again. Remember that game?
Yeah.
I started in like February, March. Yeah. It's just, there's so much stuff in that game. And I'm like, I got back into it and then another game came out that I'm going to talk about. And then I bombed my way through that. I'm like, okay, back to Rebirth. And I've had this like little timer in my head. I'm just like, I got to get this game done with. Like, I'm 75 hours into it. I've been playing it for most of the year on and off. I think it's too long. Now that I mention it. I think that is a weakness of this one versus the first one. I mean, you people talk about the first one. It's like, you took like the first 5 to 10 hours of Final Fantasy VII and padded it out to like this 60-hour game. And I'm like, yes, that's true, but they did a really good job of it and it didn't feel padded out to me. Where this, it's like they have all these open world regions with all of these, you know, modern open world game quests that I could just stop myself from doing, but I don't. They actually don't really take that long to bang through, which is why I end up doing them all. And, you know, you get stuff for them. But it's just the ways and the places in which the game gets dragged out. I'm just kind of like, come on. There was this, like, one... And I... my memories of the original Final Fantasy VII are pretty, are a little vague, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But there's this one part, like somewhere, I think it's right after the Gold Saucer, and it's like this way in Rebirth, where it's like you go and you see like a Mako reactor that had like blown up and was like non-functional in like this wooded area. And it's like a very slight part of the original game from what I recall. And it's like a whole fucking region in Rebirth with like its own set of quests. Like it's something I swear was like 15 minutes in the original game, and it's like 10 hours in this.
Ooh.
Yeah, it just, it's a lot. And I'm kind of done with them feeling the need to add weird little mini games and mechanics to every single section. Like I was in Niflheim.
Yeah.
Captain Tifa's hometown.
Yeah.
Niflheim.
Niflheim.
Yeah.
I think one of those is from Norse mythology and the other one is right. I don't know which is which.
Yep.
So it's like, yeah, you know, I get there and they've changed that up because there's all these this other stuff going on with the story. But like, you know, okay, me and this one crew go up to the reactor to like do this thing. But then I'm going through this other section where they have you controlling Kate Sith as your primary character. And I think he fucking sucks. And it was exhausting. And they put the most cumbersome, like, well, they have an out of combat thing where you need to like throw boxes around to like hit switches and stuff. And it's the worst throwing mechanic I've had in a video game, because you gotta like pick up a box and then push another button to aim, and then like you use the opposite stick to actually aim your throw, and it's just like, what is, and then you have push in some other button to actually throw the, it's like three steps more than it needs to be.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, why did you do this? And you have to be riding his little Moogle to actually do it. So you have to pull the Moogle out, and the Moogle is slow as shit. And I'm just like, this is, oh man, this is bad. And then you have to go into combat with him, and I think he's just awkward in combat too. So it's just, yeah. But you know, then there's moments when, you know, the characters are good and the story slaps and they're not padding out all this extra stuff, which, you know, some of it's good, but some of them I'm just kind of like, okay, man, all right. Mm-hmm. Like, you really Kingdom Hearts-ing this shit up. And like between chapters, like there will be flashbacks or side stories to some other thing going on with Zack. Remember Zack? He's the guy in Crisis Core.
Yeah.
He's only alluded to.
That's why.
He's like alluded to, I think, in, yeah, the guy that Cloud is, or like is a clone of, or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
Zack.
Or, yeah, had his memories implanted or erased or something. Yeah. I don't know. And then, like, these other, because there's, like, you know, this, some of this might have been cut content from the first game, because if you remember, Yuffie had, like, no story in the first game. And in this, you know, she has story. And, you know, there's this other subplot with, like, war brewing between Shinra and Wutai. That's where Yuffie's from. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, these interludes come up like every 10 hours. And I'm just like, one of them was happening and Lorm's asking me about it. I'm just like, I don't know. Like the last time, I don't know who this guy is. Like, I barely remember him from like 10, 12 hours ago. And like, it was like a 5-minute scene. I don't know. So that drags it down. I just wish it was like streamlined a bit more, but
that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm trying to get through it before, so I can move on to Metaphor, basically, ReFantazio,
because
that demo dropped, and I just kind of want to start digging into something different with my RPG time. But anyways, I stopped playing Rebirth because Astrobot came out.
Oh, yeah.
Astrobot. Yes, that game is fucking incredible.
People keep saying that.
It's the best damn 3D platformer not made by Nintendo, and as good as anything that Nintendo has ever made with Mario.
Ooh.
Really, when it comes down to it, it's like they licensed out Mario Galaxy 3 to some other company, and then just didn't look at the game and were kind of like, you're putting Mario in it, right? And they were like, yeah. And then they put it out because literally you're like bouncing between planets on a little rocket ship controller. And like, you know, there's like, yeah. And just like the, you know, the platforming feels good. You know, the combat is like very simple, just kind of punch, punch, bop, bop things. Not really anything crazy.
Yeah.
And then just intense creativity out of every single level you're going through. Right. Just always somebody who recently worked for Nintendo said that their motto is to surprise and delight, right? Dave?
Yeah, I've heard. Yes, I believe I've heard.
You've heard that before. Feels like they were doing the same thing with this game, and that they are just going to put a bunch of fun little things in the game, like even if it's not important, like the thrust of the levels and what you're doing and like the abilities you get, because you get like power ups. Some might show up in like one or two levels to help you get around. And like, you know, there'll be a set of, you know, platformery challenges where you got to use this thing to progress. But then there's just like fun stuff, like just fun little, like you, there's this one level that's like a casino deal. And the power up there is like this time stop. So at the beginning of the level, like there's all this traffic, like whipping by at like light speed, and a truck crashes in front of you, which has like the little backpack thing in it, but it's also like full of gems and coins. And so they know damn well, the first thing you're going to do is pop the time stop and then whack all these little bits of gemstones all over the place. So they're just kind of floating slow motion in the air. And you're going to sit there and look at how cool it looks just to kind of whack things around and play with them. There's like, levels where there's like a, I think there is actually a dessert themed level, where the ground is covered in ice cream, and you're gonna sit there and like stomp through this ice cream snow just because it sounds. Oh, sprinkles, that's what it is. There's just sprinkles lying around in that level for you to just kind of like whack around and play with. And everything, this is, you know, like the one company that does something with the DualSense, like the one developer that does things with the DualSense. So you're getting like really kind of specific like force feedback in the controller, like as you're. And it makes noise out of the speaker, like as you're tippy tapping on like you know, a steel plate, or you're sloshing through snow, or you're going in water, and like, you know, so you're getting like this cool force feedback to it and cool sound effects to it, and it all just like feels really good and like looks amazing. And then along the way, you have all this PlayStation nostalgia stuff dotted through the game. Which is
that's the stuff that makes it online. I haven't seen anything of the game that isn't that, I feel like.
Yeah, there's a lot. That's so the I mean, there's five levels in the game that are patterned after like PlayStation games that come at the end of each world. And there those have specific mechanics
to do it.
So, yeah, there's like a God of War one that they showed off where it's like, OK, you kind of become Kratos and you can throw his axe around from Ragnarok and freeze things. And you need to, you know, you can fight enemies with it and stuff. And it's like a whole, you know, it's the entire level is themed off of that. But most levels are their own thing. But then you find there's bots to rescue in every level. And a handful of those will be characters of VIP bots, I think they call them. They're characters from other PlayStation games or, you know, PlayStation history. So it's like that's where you'll find, you know, Ken and Ryu are in there. There's
That's what surprised me is that they is how many I thought it would just be Sony properties, but I was surprised to see that they licensed way more, like, oh, Claire Redfield's in this game somehow.
I didn't know that.
Because you know, that was the way with Astro's Playroom, which you know was the prequel to this, which all takes place inside of a PlayStation. Like the whole plot of that game is you're getting your PlayStation 5 online because it comes preloaded on a PlayStation 5. So it's the first thing you can play.
Well, I would, that what's interesting. I mean, like, I know that this is the second one, but it sounds like such a perfect, let's save this for the launch of a system, like title, so that they're actually doing it mid slash late in the console cycle. Is kind of interesting and lets them probably do a lot more with the with the idea.
Yeah.
Well, it feels, as far as I understand it, Astro's Playroom was kind of a surprise hit, right? Like it was, and you can't really say hit because it was bundled with the system. So like, but the reception to it was, I think, I have to assume that they were surprised by how much people loved Astro's Playroom, at which point people were like, hey, you guys better start working on like a proper full-fledged game.
Yeah. Yeah. It's this pack-in that just kind of like, it's a few hours and you can, you know, whatever, it shows off the console and it's fun. But people were like, yeah, this is like a legit like game of the year contender, or like, this is actually kind of the best PlayStation 5 exclusive.
On PlayStation 5. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is kind of the best thing you could play on PlayStation 5. That is exclusive, really. But yeah, I'm happy they decided to blow it all out into a full fledged, like, you know, 10, 12 hour platformer game. On the note of like the VIPs, like, yes, they license things from, because, you know, you was like Resident Evil started on PlayStation,
right,
so people associate it with PlayStation. Like Alucard is in there because Symphony of the Night, that's a PlayStation game, and some, you know, just third party stuff. It's like, okay, yeah, this game was on PlayStation, I might have played it somewhere else or whatever. And then there are some like incredibly deep cuts that, you know, games that people don't talk about or haven't talked about in 20 years that you would just not expect, that but somebody at, you know, Team Asobi like gave someone a phone call and was like, hey, can we put a bot in this game based on, you know, this? This thing.
I thought one of those that was fun.
There's a Jumping Flash reference in there somewhere, right?
A what?
A Jumping Flash reference? Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. 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 The
I'm sure that's far from the
battle buddy
cut.
Known as. No. No, it's not.
Yeah. I would say Vib Ribbon would be the deepest I could think of, but
deeper. Because they put out Vib Ribbon like 10 years ago. Like you can buy that on PSN.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
But yeah. If you go back to like games that really, you know, only we talk about and maybe have introduced to us to a particular ska band, get references in there.
Oh, yeah. No. That's great.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. That, yes.
Jeez.
Uh-huh. Yay. Mm-hmm. Now, if you say Battle Hunter, I think Battle Hunter.
No, there's no Battle Hunter. Yeah. Wow. No, that is as deep as we could go, but they did not.
That's as deep as I could think. Yeah,
I got to reintroduce my kids to Incredible Crisis.
Oh, you said the words. Yeah, yeah. But there's like 160, 70, 80 of those bots in there. And there's going to be some in there that just make you go like if you've been playing video games for as long as we have, that just make you go like, what, really? Like there was one from like a PS2 RPG that I feel like I'm the only one that ever played it or thought about it. Like in my reaction wasn't like an excited, like, oh my God. It was like, really? Like, that's why I wouldn't have guessed that. So you get those little punches of nostalgia. Richard loves that game. Like he's played a ton of it as well. I 100%ed that sucker, got the platinum trophy, did everything there was to do. Yeah, it's one of the best PS5 games.
It's a bummer to me. I guess the only bummer to me is that this is one of those rare, like, because Sony has been more and more eventually putting their first party games on PC as well. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this is one that might not make it.
No. Yeah.
Didn't make it.
just because it is so, well, A, probably dependent on a lot of the functionality of the DualSense. And
I mean, you can turn the DualSense functionality off.
Yeah.
Completely. I'm sure. That is there as an accessibility option. So it could play on a regular controller. It feels like it would feel weird not playing it on a PlayStation.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's probably the best game that Sony's ever made. Like, really? Internally? Like, it's up there. It has to be like top three at least.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It also bums me out because this is the first time I've really wanted a PS5 just to play this game.
Yeah, and they're not getting any cheaper.
No.
They're just getting more expensive.
Yeah.
It's funny because like now I'm thinking they proto-tried this with Sackboy, you know?
Mm, yeah.
Yeah.
It didn't quite work, but...
Yeah. Some people just like, it wasn't a good Sackboy, enough game. This could have been you. This could have been you. They were doing a different thing. They were trying to do the whole creation suite thing, but it's like, Yeah.
Just the other day, one of my kids was getting nostalgic about Little Big Planet. They were like, remember that game with Sackboy that's all handmade? Why we should play that again. I'm like, yeah, but remember, guys, every time we do, we realize it kind of fucking sucks. And they're like, yeah, but it's cute.
Yeah.
No, that is... That's the push pull of it. Like, I do the same thing when I look at it on my shelf. I'm just like, did I not give it a good enough, you know? And then I pop it in. I'm like, yep, I tried.
Yeah,
I sure did.
Yeah. Tried really well. Great art direction. But so who?
Oh, yeah.
Here's something, Tim. I don't really know who is this team that made these
Team
games?
Asobi.
Yeah,
I think they just. I don't know if they've made anything other because their first Astro game was a VR game,
right?
I don't know if they did anything before that. They did the Playroom VR, Astrobot Rescue Mission, Astro's Playroom, and Astrobot. So,
okay. Wow. Okay. Jeez. Who are
they? They're
going to
be making those for a while.
It's a fairly new team. Okay. Yeah, pretty much, really. I mean, great. I guess, yeah. And they... Yeah, I guess a lot of staff members of...
I'm about to go Wikipedia surfing, basically, and check and say, okay, but where did they... But these can't be first-time game developers.
Before? They spun out of Japan Studio, but now the team has been refocused around the success of Astro's Playroom.
Yeah.
And they have so they were under, Japan Studio, it sounds like, and now they're their own standalone studio under PlayStation Studios.
Okay.
And they, that's cool.
Oh, team, great game. Asobi.
Well, either of you gents play the Zelda that I would really like to play.
I played 90 minutes of it today. I squeezed it in just so that I could have an opinion about it. How about you?
Hey, I've played through one dungeon.
Oh, great. All right, I am at the start of that dungeon.
The problem is, I just keep playing UFO 50. That's really the problem right now. It's like, man, there's a new Zelda. It's so cool. I want to play it. But I have all these new 8-bit games to mess around with. And it's it's also easier to pick. Okay, so hang on. Let me talk about Echoes of Wisdom a little bit. I'm probably going to talk about it a lot more in a month when I play more.
Okay.
Seems cool
I assumed you, got to it before UFO.
It is a Legend of Zelda game with some new mechanics, but familiar kind of puzzle solving feel, having been through that dungeon, now, that all feels pretty good.
Yeah.
So,
I would say the impression that I've gotten is that this is not going to go down in history as one of the best top down Zeldas, and that's totally fine. Because we have enough of those. We have enough amazing top-down Zeldas that we don't need to do that again. And so I'm glad that they are taking that formula and doing something different with it. That said, something I think I've realized about myself is that games that give you indirect control over combat with enemies is not something I love. It's something that always makes me feel uncomfortable. I have spent every moment in this game so far wishing I had a sword. And that's a me problem, not a problem with the game. I think the game gives you so many other options and is built around this wand mechanic, and it's totally successful at that. It's just totally a thing about me, I think, that I am just please just let me kill these enemies directly.
Well... hold on.
Okay. All right. Good enough.
Right.
Yeah.
No. I'm with you for the most part, or at least that is a frustration with stealth games for me, which is why I constantly think about why one of those reasons that Snake Eater is so good is that no matter how you play, you can play it like that.
Mm-hmm.
You guys snuck around. I shot a helicopter. You could do both. So
yeah,
options.
Like, yeah. It seems it only bugs me when it's like, oh, there's like a slime I need to kill. So I summon my own thing to fight it, and then it gets killed before it can kill the slime. I'm just like, God damn it.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a stronger character to summon now, so that will probably take care of that particular issue. Yeah, I'm just like, I'm not sure where at this moment, like a couple hours in, I'm not sure where it's going to go, because I already have so much stuff that I can summon. I'm kind of surprised with how many things they give you, like right away. Like, just going through that tutorial dungeon, it's like you already have like 10 things you can summon in. It's like, oh wow, I have options here, to the point where I'm like, is this going to become a problem trying to sort out the things I want to use later? But then after going through the first dungeon, I have like all these other things, and it's just kind of like, okay, I've gone through one dungeon, I've barely started this game, this map is huge. I mean, maybe it's a point where it gets to a point like Breath of the Wild or Tears of the Kingdom, where it's like, oh, this is like what I have for the rest of the game. This is like 90% of it, and I already have it. And now it's up to me to figure out how to apply these things to get through the world and solve puzzles and stuff. But we'll see. I don't know. I haven't played enough of it yet.
I do like that they have, as much as possible, layered on the Breath of the Wild, Tears of the Kingdom item selection interface, because I think that is probably the most effective way to do this. So Wiis, it's basically, it's almost like a, it's just a quick menu that you activate with one of the directional buttons that lets you very quickly cycle through your inventory.
Yeah.
Because the regular menu in Breath of the Wild was one of the reasons that I sold that game. I did not like that menu whatsoever. It took forever to get through everything.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, Tim, like you, I'm already finding that, like, is this too many items? There must be a better way to organize these. And like in Breath of the Wild, they let you quickly sort it by, like, where's your most used items? What are the items? I guess I almost wish they also broke them down into categories, like, these are your traversal stuff. Here's your monsters for attacking. But then again, some of that stuff defies categorization. Like, what is a rock? What is a jar? Yeah. Something that you pick up and throw, you know? What do you do with that?
So, something you could use as a weapon, potentially.
Right.
Yeah. So, where does that go?
Yeah. So, I get it.
It sounds like it's leaning more Breath of the Wild than I was expecting.
No. This is definitely a top-down 2D Zelda. It's purely, I mean, there's so many items. They give you this as an option for item selection. You can still pause it, go into a menu, and choose your item a traditional Zelda. But I guess you could do that in Breath of the Wild too. So I'm sorry, Tim, what were you about to say about it?
Nothing.
I'm very positive about it. So my negative impressions are just that the stuff that stuck out to me is that
it is fine for games to just be good.
Yeah. Yeah.
good to great.
And it's also early on. We'll see how you feel.
John Linneman of Digital Foundry is right to be disappointed in the performance of this game. Good God. Yeah. I wish that they would scale back on a couple of lighting effects. If that frame rate could be a little more stable, like either lock it at 30 frames per second or just scale back on some of the post-processing because that unstable frame rate drove me nuts in Link's Awakening, and it feels almost worse here, which is a huge disappointment because
it didn't bug me in Link's Awakening like the way it bothered you. But here I'm just like, come on.
I watched Dan Linneman like graphics special, you know, compilation, whatever, in the last month, and seeing Zelda on there was like, oh, I see what you're talking about.
It's a huge
problem. That looks like a problem.
You had Tears of the Kingdom last year, which did not have these problems. It was a much more intensive game.
It was more stable than Breath of the Wild. And that's what is a bummer to me, because they took the time to polish that engine. Even though Tears of the Kingdom has way more going on than Breath of the Wild, the frame rate is still better and more stable. Yeah. And yet, they couldn't do that between Link's Awakening and this game.
Yeah.
That frustrates me to no end.
It's weird. I don't know
if that's just a Gretzo thing or what it is, but it's a bummer.
Yeah. It feels like they should have done better with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's Echoes of Wisdom, I guess.
Yeah, we'll talk more about it next month. I just feel like we've been kind of booing on it, but
yeah, we'll have more things to say about it in a month. But it was real hard for me to finally pick it up because I was too busy with UFO 50.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A game that is stupidly not on the Switch. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's stupidly not on anything else but PC, which.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I know that will change. It's just it's so clearly built for that stuff.
Yeah, it really is.
I guess I'm just surprised that Nintendo wasn't like, we'll publish this for you.
Yeah. That would be great.
But, you know, I guess it's one of those things they just, or maybe they didn't try to get a publisher, they didn't want to, and they're just like, well, we'll get it on PC and let it do its thing, and then we'll work on the other consoles. And
yeah. I suspect that because this is such an enthusiast, I suspect you, for most general audiences, UFO 50 was a real, like, you got to be following this, and I think it's probably a pretty niche thing ultimately. Yeah. And it would have been a risk for any publisher to pick it up and put it on console, and because, you know, this is just Derek Yu's quiet little hobby project that he's been, you know, shepherding for like 8 years now. And
now this, for me, this came out of nowhere, and I was surprised, like, if Nintendo picked it up, could it have been repackaged as like a retro game challenge? Basically, is my question. Or is it different enough, you know?
Well, you know, it doesn't have, like,
the spine of
Retro Game Challenge had the whole, like, little kids in the room playing the thing. But in terms of, like, the games and the nostalgia,
all I could think of, yeah.
Kind of the vague story setup is that, like, you're clearing out a, like, storage locker. Or like a big storage unit, and you know I'm piecing this together because that's like the title screen or something like that, or some, the first thing that comes up is a guy like at a storage locker, and you know finds the old, what is the LX system is what it's called, you know, in like a box with all these cartridges, and like when it shows you kind of the menu with all of the games on it, like they're all cartridges that are covered in dust and like cobwebs. And so when you play one, like you're blowing the dust off of it, you know, the dust gets blowed off of it, and then you put the game in the system to play it. And
each cartridge also has a little sub menu that you can access, Weiss, to look at the game's development history. You know, fake. So yeah, in that sense, it does a lot of the same things that Retro Game Challenge did with the magazines to create this sort of faux history.
Yeah, you'll hear like, wonderful. Oh, this was such and such's first game. This is their second game. This was, you know, there's like this is a spinoff of this other game because there's this game Campanella that has three installments, but there's like spinoffs of Campanella in other parts of the, amongst the other games. And they'll give you like the controls. Like they don't give you a ton of information about each game because so it's kind of like just finding some old carts, you pop it in and then try to figure out what the hell is going on with two buttons. Each game is only two buttons.
I kind of assumed, which I'm glad. Yes.
Yeah. And you know, by default, it lists all the games. There's 50 of them. There are 50 games in this thing for $25 and they are games. They're not just like, oh, here's a little mini game. It's like, no, they are like fully fledged 80s, you know, video games. And there's a chronology there. And, you know, at the beginning, the games are simple and some of them kind of suck because they're early games for the console. They're more esoteric and just not as like that first game.
Got a list of games pulled up here because, and so I've only played the first 8 games. I'm trying to like spend quality time with these games as much as I can, because some of them, even though they are obtuse, I find Barbuta really compelling.
Well, I've heard once you figure it out, you can finish it in like 5 minutes.
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm still very much working on the figuring it out phase.
Yeah. Yeah. But I am intrigued enough by it's like Animal Well. It's a proto Animal Well, like a single screen adventure game where you're the single screen at a time, where you're exploring a castle, you know, very much sort of like an old Spectrum game, like Manic Miner or Jet Set Willy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And with you know, the wonderful
Goonies 2, kind of like that, or like Legacy of the Wizard. I'm trying to think
of I think they're all off of Adventure, right?
Yeah. It's just a side scroller and
sounds cool.
Yeah. And that's just one. That's just one, and that's one that's not even that good.
Nope.
No, here's the thing. You don't need to sell me on this game.
Oh, I know. I know.
Like, I haven't seen a screenshot. I don't think anyone posted one, as far as I know.
I mean,
it's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, the discovery is half the fun of it. Like,
right. To me, and I don't really want to know too much.
Figuring that stuff out. I have been taking the path of, like, I have kind of been just breezing through a bit. I have not played every game or even close to it. Not even half, I don't think. Have I booted them up, but I'm just trying to get, you know, kind of a taste of what's out there and then digging into certain things. Because sometimes I don't want to just bash my head against the wall and be like, well, I have to finish every game before I moved on to the next one.
Yeah, no.
Because when you do beat a game, the cartridge turns gold. And you know, So I finished Ninpec, which is the third game.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It only takes like 10 minutes to do a run.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yep. If you can finish it.
Yeah.
It took me like an hour and a half of playtime to get good enough to finish a run of it.
Okay. Okay.
Like you would with an old NES game.
I didn't hate it, but I'd say I bounced off that one fairly quickly.
Oh, yeah. No, I really like that one. That's one of my favorite games on there. Awesome. It's an auto-scrolling side-scrolling game where you're a ninja. You can double jump. Mm-hmm. You know, there's enemies coming at you. You kill enemies and they drop like their little score bead. So you have to pick that up to get the score. And, you know, you can power up your shuriken. Each third enemy drops a shuriken power up until it's like you're shooting it faster. But just kind of the mechanics of like the way the double jump works and shooting the enemies and maneuvering around, and you can drop down through platforms. Like there's just enough like mechanical meat there that it feels good to me as like an action platformer.
Yeah. And Weiss, I'd say a lot of these games probably borrow a particular like look or overall design aesthetic from certain games. Like this game that Tim's describing reminds me visually of like Ninjutsu Marakun. One of Taito's old games. An arcade platformer. I can remember
from the collection.
Except, you know, a lot of the best ones are refined enough that they have, you know, 40 years of retro game aesthetic. My favorite game, Velgress, is this sort of...
Is that the... column, the one where you're going straight up?
Yes,
that one. Yeah,
yeah,
that,
like,
game rules.
In a way, it's like Downwell in reverse. You're just ascending a sort of randomly generated tower, but like the way that it's designed and presented is very, at least to me, feels very clearly like this is a mashup of Kid Icarus and the original Metroid. It's Kid Icarus. It's the first level of Kid Icarus's design, but with Metroid's mechanics, but also everything is streamlined. Everything is simple. Like, it is the essence of what is fun about those games. And so it is just a relentless, I'm jumping and shooting. There's some upgrades here and there, but
there's a spike roller chasing you. So you cannot fall down and like platforms crumble. Mm-hmm. So it's like a very fast paced, like arcade shooting platformer thing.
Yeah. And it's got an imminently hummable 6-8 time driving theme, just like Kid Icarus, just like the opening areas of Kid Icarus and Metroid. Like, to me, it feels clearly inspired by these two R&D1 games that are both a little obtuse because of their vintage, and this takes the best elements of them and just streamlines them into a very replayable game. Like,
What I like that you guys are saying and that I keep hearing, because it's made by one person, right?
Many people.
Or
it's a super
many,
group.
Many.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a super group.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay. Like Derek Yu sort of took it upon himself to be like development lead, but he's really shepherding this crew, crew of indie developers.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, it seems like gameplay is the thing that's coming to the forefront. And I think like that's what helps in a collection like this to me. It's like whatever genre you're going to throw at me, if you know how to do it well, cool. I'm excited to play it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, because every game, you know, it's like somebody had an idea for a game mechanic and, mm-hmm. you know, built it out from there.
Right. Versus the other way around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, mm-hmm. and it didn't, you know, it didn't have to be, it doesn't have to be a super long game. It just, yeah, they don't have to build it out until like basically like a, you know, a substantial enough product to sell on its own. They can just put an hour of gameplay in there and, well, you know, total once you get skilled enough at it and you're good. I also mm-hmm. finished Paint Chase, which
you
is.
You finished Paint Chase. Nice.
I finished Paint Chase. Yeah.
I keep coming back to Paint Chase. I love that one too.
That game's real good. Yeah. So like on my first run, I made it to like level 21 or 22 out of 25. Jeez. And then like I was struggling to get anywhere. And then I smoked it. So Paint Chase is a game where you are a car.
It's Rally X.
But also kind of like Pac-Man-ish because it's a maze game. Mm-hmm. You have to like paint the ground of this maze, you know, blue. And there are enemies that are trying to paint it red. And you can kill those enemies, you know, by just ramming your car into them, generally speaking. And at the end of like, what, like 45 seconds, 60 seconds, you have to have a certain percentage of the level painted.
So it's like Kicks in that you are constantly moving and reclaiming areas of the screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just real fun. Feels real good.
Great.
Just,
yeah. Great hook and plays great.
Breezy. You haven't played this game yet. This game called Warp Tank.
Nope.
I want Warp Tank. It's like the last game on the second row.
Okay.
So number 20. The whole idea of this game is you're a tank and you can drive on the floor and with a touch of a button, you can go straight across. So that could be, you know, you going to the ceiling. So think like Metal Storm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Yes. Or like if you're, if you could transition to a wall, you will zip to the other wall. And so there's these nice little like puzzle shooter levels you have to navigate through. And it just feels really good. Has great music, looks great, plays great. Awesome game. Just like we've mentioned five games by name and there are fucking 50 of them.
It's like you lay out that concept and all you have to do is be like, yeah, this is really good. And I'm interested. Like, and people are like, this might be game of the year. And I'm like, well, I have to play this at this point now. You know?
It is. The easy elevator pitch is that it accomplishes the thing that Retro Game Challenge also accomplished really well in that not only is it fun that, oh, this is a retro game throwback and there's this whole like, you know, progression of technology that you can observe over the years, but also the games themselves are actually really good and fun and playable. And to do that at this scale, that there's not just, you know, 7 or 8 of them, but 50.
Right.
And it's $25. And I say it's $25. Mm-hmm. Like hey, just the value of $22.50 at launch because it's launch discount. Like, not only just the value for money, but also just in the same way, I have not seen Megalopolis yet, but in the same way that people are saying, like, yeah, you might hate it, but see it anyway because it is a singular idea committed to celluloid that is not watered down by execs or committee or like it's a movie that says something. This is a whole bunch of games by game developers who had ideas and were allowed to just get them down.
I understand your connection on that. I just think it's so funny to take a movie that I haven't gotten to see yet, but is infamous for maximalist right now. Like, okay, you know, I've seen his other, you know, splurges, and I love a big swing, so I will be seeing it. But for a game that is also rather minimalist in a sense.
Yeah, well, yes, and that is true. I guess it's maximalist in the sense of the number of ideas, so that they don't all need to work. Even the games that I bounced off of, like Bug Hunter, the very second game, I was like,
I didn't like that either. Me too.
I'm not having fun with it. I'm not going to go back to it. But it was an interesting idea, and I'm glad I was exposed to it.
Mm-hmm.
I might go back to it. I really gave it like 2 minutes and I was like, no, this is not what I want right now.
Yeah. I might go back to it.
Don't get a babysitter for Megalopolis. As much as I want to see it, it's a thing where like every review sounds like the best movie and then it's one star. And then everyone's like, yeah, this, you know, it's Mike Drucker just said it's, you know, it's like Hideo Kojima did a Sim City.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw that.
Yeah.
I saw that tweet.
And you see that and you're like, yeah, so it's like worst movie I've ever seen. And you're like, how does that for those two things? I don't understand.
I want to talk about UFO 50 games more. Okay. So there's a game called Fist Hell. This is later on. I just saw the name of it. I'm like, I have to play Fist Hell. It's a beat 'em up where you're fighting zombies. Just a great name for a game.
Yeah.
Dave, I haven't done this myself yet. You might want to fire up Pilot Quest, which is on the bottom line. Apparently there's an idle aspect to it.
Idle, yeah. Not idle.
No.
Okay.
No, like you start things in the game and they will run while you are not playing it.
Yeah.
I've heard people saying that like you want to fire that one up and kind of get it going a little bit. Yeah. Where is it? Kick Club, which is kind of like Bubble Bobble, where like you're a soccer player who has a soccer ball and the funny mechanic, instead of blowing bubbles on enemies, you have to, like, there's a soccer ball in the stage that you have to knock into them, and then they go spinning around and land on something and turn into food items, and you pick it up to get the score. And then once you clear all the enemies, it picks you up in a soccer ball and whisks you to the next room. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, kind of a soccer Bubble Bobble. And
And it's Bushido, co-op.
Yep. And then Bushido Ball. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, and the main characters are colored green and blue. So, like, it's soccer bubble. A game called Bushido Ball, which is a samurai-themed windjammers.
Mm. Okay.
Oh, yeah. It's real good. So, yeah, and there's still so much I have not played.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Amazing game.
I can now officially attest that, yes, it is a great Steam Deck game.
Hey, buddy.
As I am now the proud owner of the Steam Deck that used to belong to friend of the show, author Aaron Randolph, host of the Because Fuck You, That's Why podcast. Plug for
Because Author Fuck You, That's of Why.
Author Thane.
Hey, I read that book.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, that's what I said to him. I was like... Like, who the fuck do you think you are writing something so good on your first try?
I know.
You're making the rest of us look bad.
It's compelling. It's a page turner. I love it.
Yeah. Full disclosure, Dave is starring in the audiobook that was successfully kickstarted over the summer. So
full disclosure.
He's getting paid for this.
Yeah. Well, I paid Randolph for his immaculately kept Steam Deck that he had upgraded with a much larger internal drive. So like he basically gave it to me with a terabyte of internal storage for $200, which was deal that I could not turn down.
What a
wonderful man. He had upgraded to an Asus ROG Ally. ROG, or is it Raj, short for Roger?
I hear people call it the Roger, so just go with that.
He decided he was ready for a little more handheld power and was willing to pay $900. As my first foray into Steam Decking, I'm very happy so far, especially since I've got 50 games. Well, no, it's crazy to boot up. You log in and look at my Steam list. Like, I literally looked up and said to I was sitting on the couch the first night I brought it home. I was like, I have 1,000 Steam games.
That was my problem with Steam.
like
I don't like that.
I don't know what, and then you narrow it down to like, you know, perfectly on Steam Deck. Oh, it's only 350. Mm-hmm. Okay, well that narrows it down. Mm-hmm. And then the ones that are just sort of verified by it or like playable on Deck, and it's like more like 700, 800.
Well, keep in mind though, there's a lot of them that like they still work on the Deck. They just haven't been tested.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like Street Fighter 4, for example, runs fine. It just hasn't been tested and verified because it's a
because it's an old
20-year-old game at this point, almost.
Oh, God.
Yeah, buddy, that's not that much of an exaggeration.
Hey, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater turned 25 2 days ago.
No, that one makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, well, Tony Hawk, I played a lot of Street Fighter 4, not as
yeah. Tony Hawk, I was a kid, but Street Fighter 4, I was an adult.
Yeah.
Well, Tony Hawk, I was in high school. That, I think that's a difference, too, because we were playing that at Pierce's house. Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm loving having a Steam Deck. It's great. And the UFO 50 is incredible. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Derek Yu.
Yeah. And that Steam Deck is probably already loaded for emulation stuff, I would imagine.
He had to clear everything off.
Oh, okay.
Of it, you know, so to wipe his own account so that then, you know.
Oh, that's fair. Yeah.
Yeah. So no, he could not give it to me emulation ready, unfortunately. Okay. Otherwise, I would have taken him up on that, but
it's easy to do.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
So, yeah, it pretty much does itself at this point. Obviously you have people that can point you in the right direction.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to breaking it open so that I can get, like, the Epic Games Store on there and the Amazon Prime or the Amazon Twitch store, because there's a couple of, like, Gravity Circuit. Amazon just gave away Gravity Circuit, this year's fresh retro release, Gravity Circuit, which is, you know, a really cool Mega Man-style game
talked
about last time.
Oh, that game.
Yeah, so there's lots of other stuff that I would like to play and, you know, see how it does on, like, original Xbox emulation, now that Weiss has got me in the mood.
There's a core stuff. 9 or 10 games that are fun.
Tim, what else you got?
Do you have anything else to say about UFO 50? I've said more than enough.
Oh, yeah.
Said plenty. Yeah.
Sounds like UFO 50 was taking it.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
All right.
Still playing Balatro. That game also rules. Hey, when I'm on that Steam Deck and I just see Balatro sitting there, I'm just kind of like, we're going to do one of these right now.
I'm still afraid to start it because I'm afraid if once I do, I'm not going to be able to put it down.
Oh, there's so many of those.
Yeah.
But you should pick up Balatro because it's incredible.
I've got it. I already bought it on Switch. Haven't booted it up yet because I'm like.
Just one little game, Dave. That's all you need. And then you'll know. And then you can talk about it next month. That's all. Just play one. It'll only take you like 15 minutes. You'll be fine.
Thing I know, it's 4 a.m. And that's what everyone says.
Well, if that happens, then hey, crack. Congratulations on finding a wonderful game.
I've been spending more time with the Castlevania Dominus collection, and though I know I feel like I've seen a lot of people sort of come around and be like, oh yeah, you know what, I appreciate Dawn of Sorrow more now. This is the opinion that I'm seeing a lot that I don't necessarily agree with, is people say that they appreciate Dawn of Sorrow now more that they given the distance. Because right off of Aria, it felt like, this is too much of the same thing too soon. I still feel like it's too much of the same thing too soon. I'm playing it and I'm bored. Feels like going through the motions of a Castlevania, and that's fine. But I did spend and play through at least two Dracula, though I haven't beaten him yet, Haunted Castle Revisited. And between Haunted Castle Revisited and I played more Shadow of the Ninja rebooted or whatever it is they're calling that.
Yeah.
That is a tag team of retro reimagining greatness that I sure could use more of in my life. They both of those games accomplish so much of what I feel a reimagining or a zero missioning, can and should do, adding not just graphical splendor, but like bringing the playability up to just a sort of a baseline modern standard. At first I thought Shadow of the Ninja was too hard. I was afraid it was going to be a situation like their Pocky and Rocky reboot that I decided. So their Pocky and Rocky reboot, a lot of people love, but when I compared it to the original Pocky of Rocky, I was like, you know what? I like the original better. It's easier. It's more approachable. Like, I don't have the patience to be slow and deliberate with Pocky and Rocky. But this one, Shadow of the Ninja, A, not only is it just such a much better game than the original. I'm someone who has no nostalgia for the original, but I went back and it's right there on Nintendo Switch Online, so you can check it out. And it's, I don't know, it's not great. It is. People compare it to Ninja Gaiden, and I'm like, this is no Ninja Gaiden. No.
No.
But good man alive. If you do have the patience to sort of like, I am going to be very thoughtful, because the game gives you the tools to thoughtfully and methodically pick at this very difficult platformer. It is so rewarding, getting sort of a mastery of your move set and the various weapons that get available to you. It is just it's a masterpiece of a modern retro styled platformer. And you know what? I didn't even buy it yet. That's just me playing through the demo, just working my way through the demo. The minute it goes on sale for a reasonable price, I'll be excited to pick up the full game and explore it more. But just what I've played so far, I have too many other games to play more of it than just the demo, because the demo's pretty nice and meaty. But just wow. I kind of fell in love with that game pretty hard. So, yeah, it's great.
Demo on Switch?
Yeah.
I played a little bit of it. I dropped.
Doesn't look like it has a demo on Steam, which is the thing that is in front of me.
That's a bummer.
God, that game looks nice. I almost forgot that I did purchase and play, because it was on a decent enough sale, Contra Operation Galuga.
Did
your opinion of that improve?
Yes. Oh, it would have had to.
It had to, yeah.
That Switch demo was so abhorrently bad. I still don't love the look of it overall. There's just something about it that just doesn't look quite right.
Yeah,
this is correct.
But it plays way better on a system that is not the Switch. Playing that on Steam Deck. It plays fine. It's a fine Contra game. That I don't think is going to crack my favorites, but I don't get Contra games very often, so
yeah,
hey. it is fine for that purpose of scratching that itch. But when I go back to play Contras, it will not be one of them. So that was the only thing I had. Just want to mention. Okay, remember that game Helldivers? Helldivers 2.
Yeah.
So. So, like, I've still been playing that more or less on a weekly basis, every weekend. You know, we have a crew that gets together and does some hell diving. You know, sometimes we're busy and it doesn't come together. But that game, you know, was very hot back in, like, February when it first dropped.
Yeah.
Through a series of missteps, some in the developer's control, some out of their control. Like, there was a moment when Sony was like, well, everyone has to have a PSN account tied to their Helldivers game or you can no longer play it. And people in countries that don't have PSN were like, what the fuck? And that was a whole disaster. But they just kept kind of making the game worse and less fun.
Which I was curious what happened after that.
and it just kind of kept being like, oh, this gun is fun. Now, mind you, this is not a PvP game. This is players versus enemies. There is no competitive leaderboard aspect to it. It is purely like you versus the enemies. And it was just like, people are having fun with this gun. Well, we're going to nerf this gun. And it kept like, they were just swinging away from, I think, what players enjoyed about the game. And that, you know, you can drop in with some friends, you can blow some shit up, it looks really cool, you can have fun shooting big ass guns and have a good time. And they started kind of going like, well, we want to make a balanced, challenging experience for when you're on the higher difficulty levels where you have to coordinate and like do this and like be very highly skilled with your shots and whatever. And what it kept narrowing things down to the point where it's like, well, if you're playing on a certain difficulty level, you basically have to bring this equipment or else you're fucked. And this kind of all culminated. They had a big patch in August. You know, a named patch that was like, okay, we're putting in a bunch of more enemies, a bunch of this, a bunch of that. And it just ended up being like a shit show. Yeah. Like we're trying to play the game. We're just basically getting like air juggled by like missiles and rockets and ragdolled all over the place. And, you know, the words were invoked of, I don't know if I'm having fun with this game anymore.
Oh, no.
And it was kind of a bummer. And
that's a huge bummer.
Fortunately, yeah, they put out, they kind of did a big, like, okay, we're putting out a big patch and this is all the stuff we're doing in it, which was basically making all the guns like fun again. And like retuning the balance of, you know, the difficulty of the game to where it's like, okay, your guns are going to, like, everything is going to be more savage. So your guns are going to feel awesome, but your hell divers are going to die quicker, but you're like, the booms are bigger, you know, the guns do more damage. And we'll see how that goes. And okay. They made the game really super fun again.
Okay.
so we've been having a blast playing that game again the past couple weekends. That? So yeah, it feels real good.
I'm glad to hear that. But I also, I feel like what I hear is that all those decisions drove away a lot of the player base that they had amassed, perhaps never to come back.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they weren't going to retain like the massive influx of people they got at launch who were just, you know, that was not going to be, maybe they probably could have sustained more. For sure. Like, I think they had up to like 500,000 concurrent players, like when it was hot nuts. In the first month. Yeah. And they should have been able to retain like still six figures worth of players, but it definitely dipped far lower than that. And I think things have gone back up since then. But they definitely shot themselves in the foot pretty hard. But I hope the game can sustain itself where it is, because I still like it and it's still a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Someday I'll play it. Well, y'all see any movies?
Yeah. I saw one.
Oh, you saw one?
Yep.
All right.
You saw Transformer.
Yeah.
I did see Transformers 1.
Now, Transformers, not being able to get my kids interested in it, I have been hoping that at some point this month, usually when my wife and kids go back to school, I have a little bit of free time. I have a couple of extra days where, like, maybe I want to go see a movie by myself in the afternoon, and I can go do that. I have not been able to do, like, it has been I've been in the trenches, just constant work. So I have not had that chance.
Hey, that's good.
Yeah. But Transformers 1, especially because now that it's actually in wide release, and it's not just Transformers influencers who I follow on social media talking about it, people saying like the marketing for this movie has done it a real disservice, and it is not the movie that perhaps you think it is from watching the quippy comedic trailers. Tim, would you say that tracks?
Partially, because that stuff that's in the trailers, it's still in the movie.
Yeah.
And it's still unbearable in the movie sometimes. Yeah. Like the whole, like, especially like Bumblebee. So, you know, the setup for this movie, this is going back to the beginning of origin story for Optimus Prime and Megatron. Broadly, surprisingly, I actually liked this movie like quite a bit. At the end, I was surprised. My kid did not like it as much.
Wow.
He said he liked the old one better, and I was like, "That's my boy." And then I was like, "Wait, you mean Rise of the Beast, don't you?" He's like, "Yeah." I'm like,
"Oh, what a bait and switch!"
He doesn't remember watching 86. He watched it a bunch when he was much younger, but he doesn't remember it at all.
Oh, no.
So
it's all in a mixed box at this point.
Rise of the Beasts is the old one.
I asked him, like, this was funny, and he's still on the right page, because I was like, well, what? Because he was like, I would give Transformers 1 like a 5 out of 10. And I'm like, oh, geez, buddy. Well, what would you give Rise of the Beast? And it was like 8 out of 10. He's like, it loses 1 point because there was too many humans in it. I'm like, okay, well, you're on the right track.
Not wrong.
And I think the other point it lost is because there were parts of the movie where they were places that were old, like ruins. And
no one wants to see that.
It's just old
places. Give me new places.
Yeah. Just like, I don't give a shit about it. He just didn't like the setting of some of the movie. The places were old.
Love it.
Fantastic, dude.
That's awesome.
So yeah, like the setup is that, you know, like some, I think at least 50 years in the past, there was like this ongoing war between the Cybertronians and the Quintessons and like the leaders of the Cybertronians, which were all these primes, you know, sacrifice themselves in this final battle where the matrix of leadership was lost. And Energon stopped flowing naturally from Cybertron. So instead you have, basically like a class system where you have all these minor bots that all they do is they mine Energon, and ship it up to the, is the upper class.
The spice, you know, must flow.
Yeah. Led by a Sentinel Prime who is scouring the surface, bravely scouring the surface of Cybertron, trying to find the matrix of leadership. And definitely isn't anything shady about this man voiced by John Hamm. definitely
our favorite trickster.
Yeah.
Always a good guy.
So, you know, as we find, you know, Orion Pax and whatever, like Megatron's name is like a serial number, like D16, I think is what it is. Yeah. They are minor bots, though, you know, plucky Orion Pax keeps trying to like find out like what happened with the Matrix so they can get the Matrix back and like, you know, stop having to just mine all the time. You know, they end up going on a plucky adventure. You know, they get they find Bumblebee because they get relegated down to like this trash level where it's just been Bumblebee going crazy and like making bots to talk to and like,
oh, he sounds wacky.
He's so wacky. Aww. Voiced by, you know, Key from Key and Peele. Keegan. Yeah.
Oh, was there a paycheck involved? So Key was there.
Yes, he sniffed money. There was a check to cash, so he showed up. Yeah, and
hey, get it.
He's got some, like, I mean, I'm just, you think about like in the Bay movies and Bumblebee is kind of silly because he speaks in radio. He doesn't have his voice box. Mm-hmm. This is way worse than that.
Ooh.
Well, because I mean,
Optimus Prime seen one of the shows, anything in this
one? No, he does not. So that's something. But yeah, it's like, you know, Bumblebee's like, oh yeah, the guys down here gave me this cool name. It's Badassatron, but it's pronounced Badassatron. And this keeps coming up as he's like, you know, trying to like make friends with Alita One later on. And it's just like there are those moments when you have this punchy, like Toy Story-ish dialogue that is just like, geez, fucking Christ. but you know, they're trying to make a movie for an age group. But what surprised me ultimately is that there was, you know, a good amount of like Transformers, like pathos, in it, and like history of Cybertron and like some lore that I could sink my teeth into.
Yeah.
That I'm like, oh, this, like, on the whole, like, you know, over, you know, I wasn't like run over by, you know, the way the dialogue was written. Through the whole movie, like there are some like good, you know, serious moments, like some interesting things to think about with the history of Transformers and Cybertron and whatnot. Oh, importantly, minor bots can't transform. Yeah. And of course, eventually they find out, well, there is no Transformer born on Cybertron that can't transform. Well, what happened here? So some interesting things. Yeah. And like, the movie looks fantastic. Yeah. These are not Michael Bay robot designs where you're like, oh, that's Wheeljack? Right. Sure, whatever. It's like, no, that's Wheeljack because he has the things out the side of his head. And like, that's clearly Jazz. And that's clearly this character. Like most of the, you know, Autobots to be are minor bots. They're lower class.
You're telling me that they could have done a Devastator story that's basically like a very pro-union, just like rise up against the ruling class.
Yeah.
Well, they could have straight adapted the, joking aside, they could have straight adapted the IDW continuity in which, you know, it literally is a proletariat uprising led by
Metro. Oh, okay.
I mean, like, you know, I don't want to give away too much of it, but like, you know, you know, the Autobots are mainly like worker bots where you find the Decepticons is like, it's like, oh, they had a place in like society, like in during the war, but they've more or less been exiled because they don't agree with like because they think they also they may be able to see through the thin veneer of Sentinel Prime. So like, you know, and when the way things resolve in the movie might cause a bit of a division between, like, you know, the workers that rose up and those that feel that the situation could have been handled differently. So, yeah, Starscream is voiced by Steve Buscemi. That's a thing you get with this movie.
You know, they had to do something. I didn't know what they were going to do, but they had to go as far away as possible, I guess.
Yeah.
Makes sense to me anyways.
Yeah. So, there's some bad, some less than stellar, well, writing that I don't appreciate as much. Yes. Some jokes that I definitely don't appreciate. But, like, overall, I was like, wow, that was actually pretty good. I kind of like this movie, like, quite a bit. Like, they did a good job with it. You know, if a kid watches this movie and gets into Transformers, like, hell yeah. Like, definitely better than any of the Bay movies, for sure. Yeah. So yeah, literally the best Transformers movie in like 30 years, almost 40 years.
Some of the toys look really good. The studio series version of Orion Pax / Optimus Prime figure looks really cool. I kind of want him.
Yeah. I'm looking for a figure when they do a figure of, Arachnia, not to be confused with Black Arachnia, but maybe to be confused with Black Arachnia. This is like, when I was looking it up, apparently this was a character in like the Prime universe, but yeah, it's like very spider like qualities, but like transforms into a helicopter. I thought it was a really cool design.
I can picture it.
Yeah. It was,
I'm like, assuming like, that this guy does not appear in the movie. Here's our Transformers minute. Yeah. Just heads up. We don't have any viewers anymore. Do we, is anyone still watching? If they don't, this is the Ninja Turtles Transformers crossover. This is $30 at Target right now. Normally is 50. So I just grabbed yesterday.
Yeah. Did they have it in store? They had it in your store?
I ordered it. I used the Target app.
Picked it up. Got it.
Placed a pickup order, but my local store turns out ran out. So I went to a different store and they had it.
Okay. I might have to, I kind of want that one.
Yep. Get your Target.
I had to run over to my local, because I got the.
Yours arrived?
Oh, well, I actually canceled my Amazon order because my local toy store got it in. So I just ran over there and picked it up locally. Support your local stores, ladies and gentlemen.
Man.
Yeah.
The only place I could find it still left for pre-order was GameStop. So I sadly pre-ordered mine from GameStop. I have no idea when it's coming.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm jealous.
Well, I saw that the Transformers 86 Optimus Prime that I just held up for audio listeners. I saw that it started getting out in like Canadian stores. Yeah. And then I saw that my local had it. So I like immediately like drove over there and picked it up. Because he just, when he gets a shipment in, he just posts the pictures of what he gets on Facebook.
Oh,
and
cool.
I'm like, I know whether I have to go spend money or not. I only really just like have had time to get him out of the box. Yeah. I actually haven't transformed him yet or taken his other accoutrement, because that's why he costs so damn much, because he comes with the full trailer and all the accessories that the original one came with. It's just like a nicer, you know, figure.
High overall
it
package.
Looks good. Nicer overall package, you know, with modern adaptation of Optimus Prime. But yeah, looks fantastic. Scales really well with all the other ones that are up there on the shelf right now, which is the Dinobots, because he's slightly smaller than a Dinobot and smaller than Ultra Magnus, slightly, but bigger than the rest of them.
Yeah, about
the size of Springer, actually. He probably should be a little bit bigger than Springer.
Okay.
But, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's taller than Springer. He's like a full head.
He's a full
head and shoulders above Springer. Okay. I mean, Springer has big shoulders. They scale those figures so well. they do. All right. Transformers 1, pretty good. I recommend checking it out if you have the time, for sure.
I'll transition off of bad script, but I liked it. Saw Beetlejuice. I was charmed by it. Like, I love that first movie. That is a top five for me. So, like, I was, you know, I was hopeful when things like the practical effects and people saying Tim Burton's kind of interested in this one for the first time in a long, long time. And like that stuff is like, it's such a weird mix of like, there are genuinely like a lot of cool things in the movie, and I think it's totally worth watching. It made a bazillion dollars, so it doesn't need my help at this point. And also, like, it's one of the most dysfunctional scripts, but also the things that I liked outweighed the things that weren't working in the script. Like, the script is trying to do... it's written by the guy that wrote, like, Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter, Pride, Prejudice, and Zombies, and stuff that that sounds like you would like, and then ends up I don't generally click with. And it's, he's just, the script is throwing a lot of threads out, and not really satisfying most of them. Like, but you get Catherine O'Hara, you get Michael Keaton, both just having a blast. It was really cool seeing like a lot of behind the scenes stuff after I watched the movie. It's like Winona Ryder and Jenna Ortega are like best friends at this point. And it kind of like shows, where it's just like, oh, they genuinely like each other. It was just like, it was a bunch of people enjoying being on a set.
That's cool.
Even if like, yeah. And all of that stuff. Like, there are,
I love some when that actual shows
ideas. Yes. Yeah. And I thought that stuff shown through. Like, there are actual ideas in this one, which is, like, I haven't seen from even the Tim Burton. I like Big Fish, I think, is the last time I really liked Tim Burton. And that's barely a Tim Burton.
Yeah.
Like, that's, a lot of that is, like, the John August script. Yeah. Like, and he's a competent director. So, like, really, the last, like, great Tim Burton movie was, like, Sleepy Hollow, which was 99. And, like, while this one isn't out of the park, I have a feeling, stealing from Griffin Newman, that the next one will be. Like, if he... The thing is, Tim Burton says, I don't have a good sense for what a good script is. Like, he flat out says, I can't look at a script and tell you whether this is good or bad. And clearly is the thing. If somebody puts a good script in front of him, it will be a good movie. Like, I feel like he's kind of in that spot. Yeah, I'm sure you've seen a glut of marketing at this point, but
Well, my original plan to buy Randolph's Steam Deck was to meet him at a Denny's so that we could enjoy grotesquely opulent finger sandwich that's made of mozzarella sticks that is reportedly surprisingly magnificent.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, no, yes, apparently the internet loved, like, it is highly right. Bob Mackey went a little viral in Denny's, retweeted him he praised it, and then Sam Dietz, who does the animation for the Castlevania series, also opinions on this particular sandwich are like, this should be disgusting, but it's great. We didn't make it because my car completely died, so plans changed. But that's a story for another day. My kids both really want to see Beetlejuice, so I hope that we can find the time to do that.
I think they'll enjoy. Like, it's only, you know, it's frustrating because, especially going back to the first one, like, yeah, we know that there was, like, it's so weird and there's so much lore, but, like, it's a story about the Maitlands. It's a story about two people being haunted, and, like, one of the smart things was Michael Keaton going into this said, like, I want Beetlejuice to have the same runtime as he had in the first one. I don't want it to be, you know, the Beetlejuice like show, even like they, even though like some of these things didn't quite work, like honestly it could have had a little bit more, like that almost came off a little arbitrary because of that, but it's kind of like the right idea going into it, you know. It was just they just had like 9 plots going on that they didn't need, but It's worth seeing, anyways.
Hey, shout out to movies not being 2.5 hours long.
Oh my god, yeah, that too. It was like a pretty much like a. I mean, it wasn't 90, but I think it was like 100 minutes, maybe something like that.
Yep. So it was like, Transformers.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Inside Out 2.
I just saw Inside Out 2.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about it.
It's very pretty. Very pretty. Like,
I will say is a movie that doesn't need to exist.
Nope.
I didn't hate it. Nope. It just doesn't need to exist.
Same. It was, I thought, pop up on the thing, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I want to see that. And I like the storytelling around, like, the belief. I thought was really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Everything with that was cool. And I think, like, it would have weirdly, I think I would have had a hard time with it as a kid because it, so much of it is about, like, changing the personality of the characters and, like, what is this person? Oh, this is going to completely change this character in almost, like, it feels like body horror to me when that, where it's just sort of like, oh, we're going to take out that thing and boop. Almost, you know, it's like lost memory kind of stuff, you know, and it's still, you know, like it's Giacchino's score for that is always moves me, like Alzheimer,
totally,
but also like am I gonna remember much of that movie? Not really.
I currently have a daughter that is Riley's age. And sure, so the what Riley goes through in this, I feel like the emotional stakes in this movie are inherently less than in the first one. But they're amplified for me because I feel like here I am at that stage in my child's life as well. But that, again, that's a me thing and not a movie thing. The rest of the movie is, like it was all very good, but also honestly, it was hard for me to enjoy because I kind of resent what Pixar did to their staff after it was released.
Oh yeah.
So I kind of entered it with a lot of bitterness and a big chip on my shoulder. So
yeah, it's a bump. I mean, like, yeah, all of that stuff, it does, even the things that work, they're still good craftsmen and people still try and make a good movie, but it is just so cynical just knowing everything around Disney and Pixar and, you know, crunch time and layoff after layoff and all that stuff.
Just, it was hard to get that stuff out of my mind and enjoy this movie.
Yeah.
Like, it still worked in spite of all of that, but I resented it and it didn't need to exist.
like I didn't want to give it money. Which, you know, I guess I gave it its streaming nod or whatever. But the best thing on my list, there's a documentary on Max about the making of Boy and the Heron.
There is?
It's so good. I love documentaries about an old artist just wrestling with death. They're the best. Wow.
C'est magnifique. Wow.
And honestly, like he's still Hayao Miyazaki, but like it's not as meme as like his last documentaries. I feel like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not the Werner Herzog like beatdown sort of thing. And it's fascinating because it's unlike a lot of, because you usually get these documentaries at the tail end of a career or like after someone has died or something. But with Miyazaki, it's like he's retired more than any artist. And like to the point where it's a joke within the documentary. Like after Wind Rises, he retired. After, I forget what was before the Wind Rises, he retired. And so they're making this documentary like, okay, it's not his last. And like, it might be his last, but also he's working on another movie. Like, it's so good, though. Yeah.
I'll have to check that out. That sounds great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just a quick, got to see Speed Racer in a theater again. That movie is still
glorious.
So good. So good. The one of, I'm I'm lucky to be in a city that has not only like major chains and major alternative chains, but also people trying to make their own like film places. It's halfway between a theater. It's called this one's Hyperreal Film Club, which is, they've been sponsoring movies in the theaters a lot, and they finally got their own physical space. And I described it as if you went into the Foot Clan clubhouse from the live action movie. Like, it doesn't have a half pipe, but it might as well, you know, like it's, you're kind of going into this like warehouse with that's not finished. They haven't even like put curtains over some of the wood that's laying around yet. And so
I want to go to there. That sounds great.
Yeah. It's super fun. And the joy of seeing people that have not seen it before.
Yeah, that must have been awesome.
Yeah, like my friend brought his girlfriend who had not seen it before. And like, the only thing is like, at this stage, there is a certain degree of like, once you start clicking with the sense of humor of the movie, you're so rife to laugh at everything. And I'm just like, there's moments that I'm just like, no, this is genuine, guys. Relax. This is okay.
Tone it down, guys. Come on.
Yeah. But they did a great job introducing it and curating it and giving it context, especially like, because it was 2008 and he did a good job of setting it up. It's just like, there hadn't been really that many great movies this year. The Wachowskis hadn't made a movie since The Matrixes. And the only thing that was creeping up on the path was this little movie that came out a week before, you know, did a long build up. That was Iron Man. That became the juggernaut and totally dwarfed Speed Racer, which tanked hardcore.
Yeah.
Because of such, but just really setting it up as this 2008, you know, beautiful movie.
Time capsule.
Still works. That's, oh man. Yeah. Yep. Well,
That was the second episode of us podcasting was talking about Speed Racer.
Yep. Now I'll try and dig that up at some point.
Second or third.
I know. Well, I always go like, oh, maybe I should because it's Speed Racer, but
yeah, like, man, yeah, 10 years ago, at least 10 years ago. So this was closer. It was 5 years after like our first podcast or something like that. And I went back. I was like on a long drive. I had like gone to a mag stock, but I was like by myself because I was getting this computer here from Rez. Well, the Theseus's ship, the original,
right.
Yeah. So, but yeah, on the way back, I was just like looking for something, God, anything to like listen to that was, you know, might make me stay awake. And I like listened to some of our old podcasts and, I was just like, oh, so early on, we are so much better at speaking on podcasts now,
good but for us.
Maybe slightly, but,
Yeah, I was going to say, we'll go back to these in 5 years, but that's the way these things work.
Yeah, you get better. Yeah. It's fine. Yeah.
And we were doing it before they were a format, too. So we were still figuring it out.
Yeah.
They're welcome. We were pioneers.
Yeah.
They're welcome.
Before everyone had a podcast, we had a podcast.
we were the everyone that had a podcast.
Yeah.
It was just us and Mark Maron. And Jimmy Pardo. We were the three.
Yeah. What? Yeah. Giant Bombcast was going, maybe. Yeah. I think.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I never really listened to Bombcast.
OneUp.com, they had their OneUp FM, I think, was going.
Mm.
But yeah, very nascent stages of podcasting.
Mm. Yeah. It was still confused with internet radio stations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think at that point. Hence the FM.
Yeah, you still had to explain it to people, like, what it was, basically, at the time. It was not ubiquitous.
Ugh, weird. Hey, everybody finished Caped Crusader?
No, I've not finished it.
Okay. Oh.
Sorry, yep, slow down. Pump them brakes.
All right, yeah,
pump the brakes. I watched two episodes the other day. I saw the Harley Quinn episode.
Ah.
Okay, that's like 5 or 6, I think.
Yeah, and whatever was before or after that, I don't remember. The fuck was the other one about? Shit.
The one right before that was Bruce going to therapy.
Yeah, I
right, because that was the Harley intro.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was the Ghost Rider, not Ghost Rider.
Oh yeah.
But the spectral the Ghost Rider. Like,
yep.
Yeah, like it was actually like a fucking mm-hmm. ghost. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that was one of the things I loved about that, where it's just sort of like, oh, okay, they're cool with supernatural.
Yeah.
In this.
Yeah.
Like that felt like a big thing, big break. Difference
early in the episode where like the the premise is there's this like highwayman, a spectral highwayman who's like, you know, doing robberies in Gotham, mm-hmm. and like, you know, Batman chases him in the Batmobile and he goes through a wall, and Richard was like, you just go through a wall? I'm like, yeah, I don't know, I mean, it's not a ghost, it's some guy in a costume somehow.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
I was wrong. No, they just did some ghost shit in this show. And I still think that I'll be finished with it next month. I really only end up remembering to turn it on when I'm folding laundry on the weekends.
I do great. Have one thing, but I think it's at the end.
It's fantastic. And the only thing I really want to say about it, that is a spoiler-free thing, is that there is a lot of chatter, rightfully so, in the voice actor community about authentic casting, and mm-hmm. you know, in Hollywood in general. And so one of the like pushbacks that the chuds often give is like, well, what about when black actors play white characters? Like, should that not be allowed to? And the thing is, I don't know what the thing is, but when I found out that Rupert Thorne was voiced by Reno 911's Cedric Yarbrough.
Cedric. I have to keep doing that.
I only learned that today, that it's Cedric. At first I was like, holy shit, he's mm-hmm. that's amazing. It sounds nothing like him. What an incredible voice actor that he can change himself so much. And then I was like, oh, are the assholes going to have something to say about a black actor voicing a white character? No one's really talking about Caped Crusader, though, so it's slipping under the radar. But also, like, I also kind of had to think, like, I mean, you know, the purpose of authentic casting is to give opportunities back to actors of color who, over the years, have been denied those opportunities. White actors have had the chance to play multiple races, so it's, you know, let's mm-hmm. give black actors the chance to do the same. And he does such a great job. Just...
He's been killing it.
Good lord, just incredible the way he chameleons his voice for that part. So like, bravo.
I just contrast that to Transformers 1 because that's just casting celebrities to use their voices.
What a cartoon! I don't know if you listen to that, Dave. But them making the point that like. Obviously, Andrea Romano, the legendary casting director, has retired, but it did feel like it was in that style of casting where it is still character
I'm
actors,
listening to that episode right now because I finished the series. Yep. And they said, finish the series before you listen to this. These are character actors and not famous voices. And mm-hmm. it's all great. Voice work. And for me, a surprisingly unrecognizable Tom Kenny performance as the sleazy photographer.
I forgot about that.
I know, right? It lacks a lot of his telltale vocal characteristics. So it, you know, just it's a reminder that he is also a great utility player.
Off of that, what a cartoon! After they were talking about Cedric, because of course they brought up his bit in Black Dynamite, and I also went back and watched Black Dynamite because that movie is perfect.
Never seen Black Dynamite.
You've seen the meme, but Cedric has. That perfect line of just like, but Black Dynamite, I sell drugs in the community.
Tim, you finished Shogun?
Nope.
I just finished Shogun 5 minutes before we started podcasting.
La-di-da.
Yeah. Well, so the only thing I will say about Shogun is, God, what I would give for an SNK style pixel art one-on-one fighting game starring that cast. I would love to see Mariko-sama and Torunaga and Yabushige and John Blackthorne, like, with a fireball motion to draw his pistol. Ideally,
oh, man, I gotta see this.
Either just use the Last Blade engine or the Samurai Showdown engine, and pixel art versions of these characters, because they're all so fun and distinct, and I want to slice things with them. So,
I guess Last Blade 2 has become a comfort soundtrack slash game. It's just so still. It's such so quiet, like, as these soundtracks go.
The Last Blade is one of those games that I have always enjoyed every time I pick it up, but I've still never spent substantial time with it. So,
it was on Dreamcast. I think that helped me.
I have two movies that I know that we're over time, but I want to talk about them real quick because I think I would like to have them be talked about. One is the Netflix documentary Will and Harper. With Harper Steele and Will Ferrell. Yes, okay. It's up. Cool. It is exactly what you'd expect. It's funny, it's heartwarming, it's insightful, and it is what I would hope in another time would be the thing that, like, that middle Americans who are uncomfortable with trans, with the idea of transgender people, to give them a human face, to be like, oh, that's a person. It's not this big, scary, nebulous idea that Fox News tells me it is. That's a human being with real vulnerabilities and a complete personality and an entire life that they've lived. And their choices and their feelings are actually perfectly rational and valid. Oh, I see. And so it's one of those things that I wish would be seen by everyone, but I feel like it's because it's not the 90s anymore and mass media isn't what it was. For all her faults, I've always felt that Ellen DeGeneres coming out as her character on her sitcom did a lot for the LGBTQ community in terms of just sort of like, well, they need a face. They need a fun, funny, acceptable face that, like, oh, I like that person and they're gay. Okay, well, I guess I like gay people now. And you know, sort of paving the way for people for whom that feels like a foreign idea, for them to start to get comfortable with it and start to take their baby steps to understanding and actually meeting those people in real life. And so I feel like it's unfortunate that, I mean, out of any platform it could be on, Netflix is probably the best one, but I wish it wasn't something people had to seek out. I wish it was something that somehow could just be on primetime TV, that people would just get exposed to. And
because the people that need to watch it the most probably aren't going to watch it.
So that's
It is a bummer. It's kind of an overarching bummer in a lot of ways. Like, we're not all watching the same things, and we watch the things that reinforce how we feel. Like, we both do that. Like, it sucks, but man, I know, because when something like that shows up, I'm just sort of like, you know, you want to sneak it in the mailboxes, you know, or on TVs or whatever.
Yeah.
You just want to change the channel on somebody. But
yeah.
I don't know. Like, it being Will Ferrell at least helped. Like, you mentioned the Ellen thing, and I think Will Ferrell is kind of a similar, like, friendly comedic face that people have known for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, so at least that's a good entry point.
Yeah. My only hesitation to seeing it is exactly that feeling of, well, this is just going to confirm how I feel anyway. You know, it's not. But I think what is particularly compelling about it, if you are already, like, you know, on board, what is compelling, particularly compelling about it, is the question that is constantly raised of Will's celebrity. And Harper knowing consciously, like, I'm asking you, Will, to use your celebrity to help me, to help me actually make this road trip. But also, like, at what point does that get uncomfortable? At what point do we feel like we're exploiting ourselves? Like, there get to be times when Will is really sort of exploiting his celebrity. And then the next day you're like, he pushes back on me. He's like, I felt like we were trapped in a fishbowl there in that scenario we were in last night. I don't know how comfortable I am with this. I'm taking you out of your comfort zone. I'm fearing for your safety. Like, there really is an interesting push-pull about using someone's genial celebrity status to push an issue, and the buttons that that pushes in the general populace, like, to what degree is it
expectation? That's really
to what degree could it actually endanger the person that you're trying to help? It's an it's a compelling question and makes the documentary worth watching, even if you're not a person that needs to watch it.
No, I'm looking forward to it still. Like, I thought it was an interesting way to do that story. And like you said, like, I think that's a good angle for it as well, where it's like, oh, this is how it's challenging this. Oh, how should you use your power or clout or whatever? Or should you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other movie I want to mention is The Wild Robot, DreamWorks, The Wild Robot.
I need to see this.
Okay. I'm glad. I didn't know if people who did not have kids... reader kids.
Right. This is, me and Tim were talking about this a little before recording, like, because I didn't realize how popular the book was, but in the last, like, you know, month to, like, few weeks / I got a message in my group chat about how good this movie is while we were talking.
Oh,
like,
wow. Oh, that's great.
It has definitely, like, gained a lot of word of mouth at this point.
That's so excellent. It is a very faithful adaptation of the first book, more faithful than I thought it was going to be. The author actually came to my kid's school last year. He was the visiting author. And so she got to meet him, got a signed book by him. Jan has met him before at conventions, like library conventions. And he is an all around
Dave on the take.
Right. Look, you know, Peter Brown signed a book for my kid. He and I are besties. You know, I keep up with him on social media. It's no big deal, guys. It's no big deal. Peter Brown. Peter Brown? Did I mention Peter Brown?
You should use that clout, too.
But the books themselves are... I mean, it's also... I was afraid that my perception, because I can attest that it is a pretty faithful adaptation... And so I enjoyed it because it represented the books that I read to my kids, but also ended up loving myself so much. They are, in a nutshell, a really compelling story about how an artificial intelligence gains sentience, like slowly through attrition, through banging its head against a wilderness and figuring things out. An AI gains sentience, but the miracle about these books is that they are written for all ages. Is that somehow that comes? Is that the language used is comprehensible by very young audiences and is no less sophisticated for that? It's one of those miracles where it really just works for all ages. And I wasn't sure the degree to which that comes through in the movie, because I already was familiar with the story. So I'm glad people are enjoying the movie on its own merits and that it is as successful as I thought it was.
I think really it's going to be a sleeper hit at this point, like, because it's got the pedigree, and also, I mean, frankly, it's a kids movie and people need to bring their kids to quality movie. Not that Transformers isn't. They've got a choice at this point. But
remember last month when my kid had to see Minions? Because that was the only kids movie out.
Exactly. Yeah. There's better choices now.
Well, even when I was watching Inside Out 2, I was thinking about Wild Robot, where I was just sort of like, oh boy, I like that one. Or I like the idea of that one. I don't think the trailers did a wonderful job for a person like me, exactly.
Sure. It doesn't really convey what the story's about.
It felt a little by the numbers just from, like, that trailer. Yeah. But also knowing that it was a popular book or book, I didn't even know it was a series. I thought it was one book. Yeah. But going, okay, there has to be a bit more depth to this. And also going, oh, if it's just these two characters, there's going to be a lot of development. Like, there's... That's good for the script to not, like, throw A bunch of migrating birds that, I don't know, go and see everything. That movie looks scary. The one that Kumail was in?
What
was
that? Yeah, Migration? Yeah, I haven't seen
it. Yeah. No, that's great. And that was DreamWorks.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
That's also a studio I'm not usually like.
Not super psyched
my
about.
Favorite. So, yeah. So that's great.
Yes. Yeah. I forget who directed it. I think we looked it up, and I forget.
Well, if we keep rambling, I'll look it up.
But. Yeah. but no, suffice to say, it was. It's a pretty beautiful film, and I hope it works. Great voice performances. Another wonderful opportunity to hear Matt Berry in anything.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Just as a small, and on the drive home, I was saying to Jan, Matt Berry, how much did he get paid for being there? He's a minor character in this movie. I'm trying to think of how long his studio session couldn't have been more than an hour to get in all the lines that he, like, not that his character doesn't have a lot of screen time, but the actual number of lines, I bet they could have recorded that in an hour. What's the SAG-AFTRA contract for an hour for a movie with this level of distribution? I bet he cleared $200,000 for that 1 hour of studio time.
Well, I heard I didn't get up to him in Fallout, but I heard he was kind of in cameo zone for Fallout.
Oh yeah,
as well, the TV show.
I feel like
he might be in that zone where it's just like. Everybody loves him. Everybody knows his voice. It's very distinct. You know, just you're in the Patrick Warburton zone.
Yeah.
Buddy, you know, like it was Chris Sanders who wrote Lilo and Stitch, directed Wild Robot.
Wow. Oh, and, okay. Interesting.
Yeah, I'm not even to his where is the directing? Or maybe he just wrote that script, but no, he directed.
Oh, damn.
IMDb is kind of laid out, kind of stupid at the moment. But yeah, he's only. Oh no, he did direct Lilo and Stitch. He did Lilo and Stitch and How to Train Your Dragon, and then did The Croods and Call of the Wild. So,
huh? Okay,
two hits, two not hits. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure kids like Croods more than 40-year-olds.
Yes, but. Yeah. Kids, the kids do like The Croods. It's not me, but okay. Right. Yeah.
I mean, Lilo and Stitch, I think, is ride that, man.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Forever.
Yeah. All right. I think that's all I got.
Okay. Yeah. So I am not familiar with The Wild Robot yet. Like, I have not read that book. Richard seemed familiar because he really wanted to see the movie, but I don't think he's read it himself. I don't know if, like, teacher read it to him or something. But.
Okay. Yeah. If he hasn't read, go grab a copy and.
Yeah, well, right. Book. So, like, right now, part of his fourth grade curriculum is that he is reading to me every night.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. So
I don't know. I like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it has been fun because he's starting to get into it.
That's great.
And looking forward to it. So yeah, and he makes little notes on sticky notes and puts them in his book because he has questions about things. So
that's very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know. Maybe I'll just read The Wild Robot myself.
Breezy, but,
yeah. Right now I'm reading John Moxley's book, which is fantastic.
Okay.
Yeah.
I had no idea how good a writer he might be.
Well, he writes the way he talks.
He's a wrestler. I'm guessing this is a wrestler.
It is a wrestler. Yeah. No, I was told that the audiobook is really good because he does it. So it sounds like he's just in the car with you talking to you. But
he's a very man of the people, you know.
Okay. Like he's such a quiet weirdo. And like, you know, he doesn't, he's kind of shy. Like he doesn't do a lot of like interviews. And such,
right.
Like every now and then, like he would be on his wife's podcast and he'd come out of his shell like a little bit. But like,
no, that's mostly what I know about him off wrestling is from Renee's Instagram, like whenever she posts something.
Yep. Yeah.
Which is always adorable.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. No, his book just like swings wildly from him talking about like, you know, wrestling things. And then him just talking about how he doesn't fuck with the ocean because he doesn't want to get attacked by a shark. he will not go in further than like knee deep, so in case he's attacked by a shark, he can punch down at the shark.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I respect that.
And,
yep,
and
I,
just, you know, yep. He's just a really, you know, funny, interesting, weird guy.
Nice.
As many of the best wrestlers are, they're incredibly strange people. So yeah, I'm enjoying that book. I'll be finishing that up soon, and then hopefully I'll get my hands on Jason Schreier's
book,
Play Nice, that's coming out next week.
I don't know this. What is this?
You're familiar with Jason Schreier?
I don't think so.
So he's a games writer. He works for Bloomberg now. So
he's one of these former. He's written for everything.
Journalist.
He's written. I feel like he's was on Kotaku, and like he's written for many, many websites. Gotcha. But
just
now he
one that I missed, I guess.
Yeah, he does video game and tech columns for Bloomberg. Mm-hmm. And he's written a couple books before about, like game development. I've read both of his books. They were both about like he would kind of like center in a story about like a certain game, or there'd be like this is the chapter that's about Kingdoms of Amalur, and all the crap that went down with that
game. Oh, did he write like a giant blog about like TechCrunch stuff, like? Years ago, I feel he's like that might have been him.
Written a lot about that topic. His previous books were Blood, Sweat, and Pixels and Press Reset.
Okay, I've heard of Blood, Sweat, and Pixels.
Yeah, yeah. So the both very game dev focused. But those were like, you know, one book would have like a dozen games that he would talk about, and this one is just about Blizzard.
Okay.
And yeah, he said he's interviewed something like 300 former. And possibly current Blizzard employees about like, you know, just the history of the company and things with Activision and stuff like that. So, yeah, no, his previous books were both very good. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to this coming out.
Speaking of exposés, I take it neither of you have watched the Vince doc on Netflix.
I'm going to, I think. Now that I've heard enough of, like, I don't know.
Oh, I've seen enough screen grabs that I'm like, oh, this sounds like a shit show. I gotta watch.
Well, I knew it was a shit. Well, I heard from like a comedian, because of course of wrestling, a comedian that is also like wrestling nerd. It's like, no, there is stuff like, you know, the story, but it'll make you even more mad. Like, there is some extra stuff in there. It is worth watching.
I mean, it was originally supposed to be, like, kind of like a fluff piece, I believe.
Right.
Yeah, it was just like, oh, yeah, we're going to talk about how great Vince McMahon was. But then that whole lawsuit came out, which finally fucking ended his goddamn career.
Yes.
And, like, now it's basically a hit piece. Or a truth piece?
I'm still curious.
I have not seen it yet. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure it's not. I would love a We Need to Talk About Cosby version of the Vince McMahon story, I think. Mm-hmm. Of just like, we're so attached to WWF/WWE, but there is this root of evil.
And that's, you know, I haven't watched the doc yet. Obviously, I don't know Vince McMahon personally, but it's like when these accusations came out, I'm like, oh yeah, this all tracks. Like none of this sounds out of the ordinary for this fucking maniac. You know, WWE, the machine moves on, the wheel keeps turning, and you know, it's been doing great. People are very happy with WWE under Triple H's direction. And you know, there's many reasons why I don't watch that product anymore, but it's still like stuck in my head. Like everyone there fucking knew. Like you could be like, oh yeah, this was a Vince thing, but it's like, no, the company of WWE is like being sued in this lawsuit, and like you cannot tell me that like his closest family members didn't know. And with all the people that were involved, that those, you know, that everyone in the locker room didn't know. I mean, it was a very deep-seated problem with the company that I don't think has been fully expunged.
So they found a way. They found a scapegoat, of course. I mean, like, a scapegoat that did it. of course. Yeah.
Well, but, you know, the thing is, you know, they're merged with UFC now and have...
I missed that. Kind of,
Vince sold the company. Yeah, they...
Oh, I did hear about that.
They merged with UFC. They're run by, like, you know, TKO is the company that runs both of those. And TKO, you know, is going to get rid of anybody, you know, that might... be a stain on WWE. Like, so it just kind of depends on how the dominoes fall at this point. I haven't watched that doc, but yeah, still some gross things about WWE that are, you know, that have been going on for decades, or that went on for decades. They're probably not still going on now, I would assume. That's a lot to wash off, a lot of bodily fluids to wash off your company. You know. Yeah.
Yep.
All right. I guess that about do it.
About
2.5 hours on the longer one.
All right.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. We're good. That's going to wrap it. Pardon me.
Oh, no.
For this month.
We got to do it again.
Yep. Ruin the whole pod.
Back to one, everybody.
All right. And hi, everybody. Welcome to Triple Radio.
We're still barely clinging to schedule for this year.
I know,
but we're gonna make it.
Yep,
threading that needle.
Yeah,
get one in.
Break this into three parts.
Yeah. Hey, we get one in the end of this month, early November. Get one in the end of November, early December. We land blank of the year. We're good. We did it. 12 in a year.
Yeah,
we can do it. I guess if you've listened this long, I'll just mention coming up on the 19th of October. I have penciled in for the open beta game for Super VGM Melee.
Hey, cool.
So hopefully that won't be a disaster. I was going to do it sooner, but then decided to wait longer. This is a lot to do when it's the busiest month of the year for me at work. I'm going to do it in the afternoon. That day. Yeah. That occurred to me. I'm just like, I don't have to do this in the evening. When I do it at the con, it's in the afternoon. Why don't I just do it in the afternoon? Maybe that'll be easier for some people. Maybe not. I don't know. But we're going to find out. And other than that, we'll be back next month with another one of these things. So
awesome.
Yeah.
Catch y'all later. And bye-bye.
And catch up next time.